Quorum's present. We have Senator Tomassoni today with the Environment, Economic Development, Agriculture Bill. If we can begin, Senator Tomassoni moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Tomassoni.
Mr. Chairman, how would you like to proceed? I have an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape.
What we've been doing is taking amendments after we've had a discussion of the bill.
Right. Okay.
Whatever you'd like to do in terms of introduction, spreadsheet, explanation of the bill.
Okay. All right. Mr. Chairman and committee members, the economic development, environment, and agricultural bill is, I think, is a very good bill. The budget invests in measures that create jobs, strengthens our infrastructure, and makes Minnesota a more competitive place to do business. And these investments will yield jobs, vibrant communities, additional state and local tax revenues, which will exceed those initial investments. The governor has proposed a $30 million increase to the Minnesota Investment Fund, and that is in the bill. Over 8 years, MIF has funded 53 different projects and helped create over 3,000 jobs and attracted more than $500 million in private investment. The proposed $30 million investment will bring an estimated $800 million in private investment to Minnesota, thereby creating thousands of jobs. This investment will help Minnesota compete with other states for good-paying jobs and business expansions. The Minnesota Job Creation Fund, which the governor proposed to invest $25 million, and the Senate bill has the same $25 million investment, is an incentive-based program that will create thousands of jobs and leverage over $450 million in private investment. And there's also a global competitive initiative that both the Senate and the governor invest $1.5 million in the Minnesota Trade Office for global competitiveness. The money is to use to set up three trade offices in foreign markets and promote Minnesota. The housing and job growth initiatives will help build housing in areas that have seen large job growth but do not have affordable housing available. Funding is available when an employer or a group of employers make a contribution to addressing the housing shortage. And continuing job growth in the successful area means creating housing to support those ready to work. There's an investment in the Minnesota Film Board to bring films to Minnesota. DFL makes the environment a priority by investing in mobile monitoring equipment and providing resources for the continuation of chemical monitoring in East Metro. The bill also provides a new incentive for the use of Minnesota-made solar panels, helping the state grow its solar energy. And I think we've got that language down to the point where people are not nervous about it. The Senate and the governor allocate $7.5 million next biennium for the DNR to continue its efforts dealing with aquatic invasive species. The bill makes over $15 million in available grants for agricultural research and education, and the establishment of the Office of Broadband will improve and foster encouragement of broadband expansion to promote job growth and increase services to areas without limited broadband services. I think you all probably have the spreadsheet that is available on this, and I think, Mr. Chairman, you would like to go through the spreadsheets and explain these to the committee. There's the bill itself we can talk about in a little bit, but who wants to go first on the spreadsheet?
Sir? I will.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mueller will take you through the spreadsheet so you can understand what's in the bill, and we can go from there.
And Senator Tomassoni, that big question, that can you explain it? We don't understand what's in the bill, only if Mr. Mueller explains it.
Mr. Chairman, I can't possibly judge what you guys understand when we get done here. So I'm hoping that the explanation of the bill is sufficient to make you all understand that it's a very good bill and that you'll all vote for it.
All right, we're all for that. Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman and members, the bill itself contains four different appropriation articles. Article 1 is the environment appropriation article. Article 3 is the agriculture appropriation article. And Article 4 is the commerce and PUC appropriation article. And then Article 5 is economic development. Altogether, it directly appropriates about $1.2 billion. And about half of that comes from the general fund. A little bit over $600 million of it comes from the general fund. of just direct appropriations. Going to your spreadsheet, the first two pages of the spreadsheet are just a general fund summary of all the parts of the bill. This bill in total spends about $135.3 million over the base, or about $38.2 million over the governor's proposal for this area. The first article, natural resources, I'm working off that the center column there that says Senate, and then you can look at Senate minus forecast in the shaded area. The first article, the environment and natural resources, spends about a little bit over $20 million over the base and about $2 million over the governor. Most of this new money in this area is in the DNR, and we'll get to the details of that when I go farther through the spreadsheet. The agricultural article is at base level. There's some reallocations within the Department of Ag for some different priorities, but the ag article does not spend any new money over the base. Article 4, Commerce and PUC, there's some governor's initiatives. If you look over on the left column there, you see Gov's budget had about $3 million worth for new staffing within the Department of Commerce. When we get to further in the spreadsheet, the Senate picks up most of that, and then there's also another one-time initiative for weatherization. So the Senate's about $5 million over the base in that article. Then you'll also see the one the one revenue item in the bill is on the bottom of that page, where we pick up about $9 million of new revenue to the general fund for raising one of the fees within the Department of Commerce. It's a fee on insurance agents. Going to the second page is a summary of the economic development, general fund summary of the economic development area, and Mr. Jensen will go through this later on in more detail. But this is where most of the new money in this bill is going in this article. You'll see it's $118 million over the base and about $33 million over the governor. And there's, like I said, Mr. Jensen will go through those initiatives as we go through the spreadsheet. So you see at the bottom then, all articles, spending-wise, we're $143 million over the base. And we offset that with $7.8 million of new revenue. And then we get our net of $135.266 over the base general fund, which was the target given to this division. On to page 3 is the more detailed change item summary of what's going on in the first article, the natural resources. The first agency here is the Pollution Control Agency. And the way the spreadsheet works, I'll be working off, again, that column that says Senate. And these are just the change items that compared to the base budget. The base budget sort of goes along the top. Then we have change items, and then we have new totals, and then revenue changes are usually at the bottom of each agency. With the Pollution Control Agency, there's only one change item in the general fund, and this is bringing over the base amount for the Environmental Quality Board. It used to be housed under the Department of Administration. It's being moved over to the Pollution Control Agency in this proposal, and this is funding them at their base level. Next, we have a number of changes within the Environmental Fund in the PCA. The governor had about $10.2 million worth of new spending from the Environmental Fund, and we're below that at just over $7 million. Some of the major initiatives here are, on the Senate side, is $1 million for water program operations, and the governor was at $3 million. On lines 25 and 26, the PCA is required by federal law to raise air emission fees, and those fees have already been raised. And lines 25 and 26 just allows the PCA to actually spend those fees that they collect. Line 27 is some one-time money for mobile air monitoring equipment, Senator Dibble bill. And then lines 29, 30, and 31 are all sort of tied together as part of a biomonitoring initiative. the governor was had two items that were going to be monitored: asthma and mercury levels. And what the Senate has done is incorporated the Senator Sieben proposal of monitoring PFC, ongoing monitoring of PFCs. But we did that within the same budget amount that the governor had for this area. Line 33, you'll see some one-time money for rulemaking for silica sand mining. And then we're also carrying the, on line 34, the language for the product stewardship program. The governor had this as initiative also, and the Senate's version now is a little bit more scaled back than the governor's, and it applies just to paint. So there's a small amount of spending there and also a small amount of fees that go along with that. And that's pretty much it for the major initiatives. Like I said, it's about $7 million out of the environmental fund compared to what the governor had, about 10.2. The next section there is other fund changes. This is where the governor was carrying the governor's proposal for silica sand mining, which was about $3.4 million, so the Senate is much lower on that amount. And then the last, so overall the Senate is increasing the PCA spending by about $7.3 million, or 2.4%. The last part of the page there, the shaded area, are the revenue changes. Most of those are just the wastewater lab and the sanitary districts are mostly just fee changes coming from other agencies and not really much of an increase. And then you see the product stewardship plans, which would be paid by the paint companies. That is it for the PCA. On to page 4, we have the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Mueller, you said on lines 40 through 43 there was very little change. We didn't spend any there, correct, other than what the governor wanted?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, no, we did not spend any of those.
I got a line that's half cost.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, on to page 4, which is the DNR's changes. The first section there are the general fund changes. The governor had an overall proposal where they did a significant general fund decrease to the Division of Minerals and Lands and Minerals, and then was recouping that with a number of fee increases. And the Senate did not carry those fee increases. So the Senate's overall reduction to this part of the DNR on lines 72 is less than the governor's because we did not increase the fees to compensate for that. Lines 73 is an increase in the general fund. We're covering the cost of some utilities that have to pay a fee for when their utility lines cross public land and public waters. It was a fee that was put in place a couple years ago, and it was deemed to be a little bit high, so that we're repaying that amount with general fund dollars back. Line 74 is the governor's proposal for aquatic invasive species, the $7.5 million of general fund. This is basically replacing one-time money that was put in the previous biennium. So this keeps the department at pretty much their current level for aquatic invasive species. So it's new general fund money, but overall it's not new money to the DNR budget. Next on line 77 is the money for forestry management at $11 million of general fund. The governor was at $8 million. Again, this replaces a lot of money that is within the forestry account due to lost revenue that the DNR is seeing due to low sale price of the timber. And this allows them to also offer up some more additional cords of wood. The last major initiative here is on line 78. The governor had $4.5 million for estate parks, and we're also carrying that. That is, again, to mostly replace one-time money that was in the previous biennium. So this isn't really a much of an overall increase to the state parks. This just keeps them at their current level. So for total changes, You see the $20.7 million for DNR general fund. So we're above the governor here. The governor's at about 15.6. Most of that is because of the additional money for forestry. Next, we have changes in the natural resources fund. This is where the governor was carrying a lot of the fee increases, like the minerals lease fee, the permit to mine fee, and we are not carrying those fee increases in this bill. Line 90, the governor had a supplemental budget proposal for water use fee increases that was going to raise almost $9 million. This proposal does not contain that. On line 92, you'll see a reduction from the forest management account, and this is just to reflect the lost revenue that is actually in the account. So we had to lower the appropriation to match the revenues that were coming into the account. And the governor did not have that in his proposal, but they probably should have. The next line there is a $1 million increase in the parks and trails for the reservation system. This is more of a technical change within the DNR and how the reservation system works and how the money flows through the. They have an outside vendor that handles the reservation system, and this just allows them to keep some more money up front. And the other changes are some other small ones, some additional money for cross-country ski grooming within state parks, and conservation officer training program on line 97 is $126,000 from the Natural Resources Fund. There's also some money down in line 109 within the Game and Fish Fund. This is for sort of a recruitment program for new conservation officers. So you see, actually, out of the Natural Resources Fund, we have a net decrease in spending. Most of that is due to the adjustment we had to make in forestry, the $5 million. Next, we go to the Game and Fish Fund. The governor was proposing $10.4 million of new money out of the Game and Fish Fund. A lot of this was spending that was tied to the increase of hunting and fishing fees that occurred just this year, but that was passed last year. And the governor was requesting to spend about $6 million of that in the governor's proposal. And what the Senate has done is cut that pretty much in half. And the Senate felt that there was a little bit of a big increase coming off the just recently passed hunting and fishing fee increase. And then the Senate also has one additional proposal on line 106 is to use some of the new game and fish money for a local enforcement grants on aquatic invasive species. So that's $1 million. So overall, the Senate has about $1 million more for aquatic invasive species than the governor does. And the rest of the items there are pretty much governor's proposals, but reduced down by about 50%. The last section there are other fund changes.
Senator, yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Mueller, line 110, can you explain that one a little bit better there? That was a reduction from the governor's. That was the enforcement.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, and this was part of the overall proposal that the governor had to increase Game and Fish Fund by about $6 million, and it was spread between three different divisions of the DNR. So there would still be an overall increase to the DNR enforcement division, just less than what the governor had proposed. So the governor had proposed a $1.6 million increase for the biennium for enforcement, and we reduced that in half. But we also did fund the conservation officer training program. We fully fund that at the requested amount.
Thanks. Thank you.
The last part there are other fund change items. This is where the governor had a new fee for the drill hole inspection, the drill hole court library, and we did not carry that. That was being shown here. And the governor also had a proposal to increase the cost of the critical habitat license plate. That would have raised about $1.6 million, and the Senate is not carrying that. So you see the overall spending down on line 126 for the DNR is up by about $23.8 million, or about 3.8%. On the next page, you'll see the revenue and fee changes within the DNR. The governor was increasing revenues and fees by about $13.1 million. The Senate actually has a net decrease in fees, and there's actually only one small fee increase on the Senate side, and this is the real estate application fee that raises $21,000. This is just a small adjustment on that fee. All the other fee increases that are being shown on the governor's side are not being carried in the Senate side. Next, we have the Met Council Regional Parks or Metro Parks. There's no change to that. That is being funded at the base level, $17 million. And then the Minnesota Conservation Corps, the governor had a proposal to restore their general fund amounts that they were getting in the past. And that cost just less than $900,000 for the biennium. Again, that was the governor's proposal. The last agency here on this page is the Board of Water and Soil Resources. The governor had two proposals that spent about $1 million of new general fund money, and the Senate is carrying the one for the internal control compliance. It's additional staffing for them to handle the some internal control issues at $250,000. So that's a less than 1% increase.
Mr. Chair?
Bowser.
One more question, Mr. Mueller. Where does it reflect the legacy money in the parks portion of the DNRs?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ingebrigtsen, within this bill here and this budget, we are not showing any of the legacy money. Since that is coming in a separate appropriation bill, and we usually track that separately since it's all one-time money, that's not shown here on this spreadsheet, but I'd be happy to get that to you and have it compared overall to how much of the other parks money is coming from the other sources. Okay. Mr. Chairman, that's it for page 5. On to page 6, we have the last two agencies within the environment area. The Minnesota Zoo is being funded at the base level. There's no funding changes for that, so that's about $46 million. Most of that is the you'll see on line 31 is actually the special revenue fund. That's their own fees. So there's about $10.8 million that comes from the general fund for the zoos, or the zoo, the Minnesota Zoo. So there's no change to their budget. Then the last one we have is the Science Museum. The governor had a small $11,000 increase per year. We're carrying that, so that's about a 1% change to their budget. And then you'll see on line 235, we reduced the payment back to the closed landfill fund from $12.1 million in fiscal year 15, dropped that down to 10, and then we upped it again by $500,000 per year in the tails. We owe the closed landfill fund $48 million from some money that we transferred out of that fund back in 2010 to deal with the overall general fund budget at the time. So we owe that fund $12 million per year over 4 years plus interest. So we're altering that payment slightly, at least the first year of the payment in this budget. At the end of this page here, is this, again, a general fund summary of all the agencies in the environment article. So you again see there's about just over $20 million in new spending over the forecast, and it's about $2 million over the budget, or over the governor. Mr. Chairman and members, on to page 7, we'll go to Article 3. This is the agriculture article. Again, there's a no net increase in spending in the ag article, at least for the general fund. There's a couple of agricultural fund changes on line 299 and 300. The first one was in the governor's budget. Is this dealing with the commercial animal waste technical license? And there's the small fee that is tied to that. And there's some additional spending that is coming to help the department update its training and education manuals for pesticide application. Going back up, you'll see some adjust. The first thing is the governor had a proposal to increase the budget for the lab operations at the Department of Ag. We've funded that. The next line, you'll see an adjustment to the Agri program. Now, this is the money that is left, or not left over, but part of the budget that used to go for the ethanol program, and that is still within the Department of Ag's budget, but now they are running a grant program out of that. And we have adjusted that overall grant program by $5 million, $5.27 million, and then we've named a number of grants. It still leaves about $15 million in the Agri program for the department to do other grants. So that you'll see the grants there, the specific grants there listed on lines 288 down through 294. One of the grants would actually help fund the Ag Utilization Research Institute, which does have its own separate budget down on the bottom. But this would just be some additional money for that. Farm Business Management Grant, a grant to the U of M Extension Service for 4-H, another grant for the FFA, County Agricultural Societies, and it's some additional money to an agriculture microloan program, and then $1 million for the Morris Ag Energy Efficiency Grant. So it's about $4.6 million in specific grants out of that Agri program. Again, it leaves about $15 million for the Commissioner of Ag to make other grants out of that program. That is it for the Department of Ag. The other two agencies we have in the agricultural article have no changes. The Board of Animal Health, we're funding them at the base level. And the Ag Utilization Research Institute, their direct appropriation does not change of $5.286 million, but again, they're getting $1 million above from the Department of Ag through their Agri program. On to page 8, we have the Article 4, Commerce and PUC. Most of the changes in the general fund area you'll see are we're in the governor's budget for additional staffing for different areas in the Department of Commerce. Many of these new staff positions are basically paid back to the general fund through assessments. So there's additional staffing for the mortgage area, consumer protection area. We continue the unclaimed property program. That's in the tails. That was a proposal that came last year that we gave the Department of Commerce some additional staff. And this is actually a revenue-producing proposal in the tails. And it is currently, but we've continued it on into the tails. We made a small adjustment to their securities area. They're requesting $680,000. The Senate's at $420,000. That's the one reduction. We funded the broadband task force, or as it is in our office, it's a broadband office still housed within the Department of Commerce. There's a new item here on line 372, Senator Tomasoni proposal. It's $2 million of one-time money for the weatherization program. This is to help offset some of the federal reductions that are coming to this program. So we have about $4.79 million of new general fund for the Department of Commerce. And like I said, $2 million of that is one time. Next, you'll see other fund changes. And one of the proposals the governor had was to send more money to the Division of Weights and Measures there's a petroleum inspection fee. And the governor proposed actually raising that fee and then moving more of it to the Division of Weights and Measures. And the Senate is kind of going along with that. We're moving some money to the division, but we're not raising the overall fee to compensate for that. You'll see on line 380 is the Made in Minnesota solar proposal. Well, this amount of money is being collected into a new account, the $7.5 million and $15 million. You'll see that below down in the revenue side. It's being collected from the Renewable Development Fund and the from the SIP program, the Conservation Improvement Program. And so it's capturing some of that money, not to exceed $15 million per year for solar production incentives payments. And you'll see some of the other small items there. There's a couple studies that are tied to that proposal that are being paid for here, $100,000. There's some increase. We require 5% of that petroleum inspection P to go for weatherization, energy improvement grants. That's the 160. And then there's a proposal to do a statutory appropriation out of the TAM fund for the Legislative Coordinating Commission to help pay for their captioning costs and such. This is money that they've received in the past, but we've made it now a statutory appropriation. You'll see the revenue changes down below. The major change there, again, is the $9 million for the appointment fees for insurance agents. This is a fee that they pay annually. It brings it up to sort of the fee amount to the nationwide average from $10 to $30. And, again, that was in the governor's proposal. The rest of those next few items are just cost recovery assessments that the Department of Commerce makes for their new staffing. And then there's a switch there in that weights and measure fees. There's a loss of general fund revenue, but more revenue goes over to the special revenue fund. On line 402, again, you see the revenue that comes into the state accounting system for the solar program. This isn't necessarily a fee increase. It just captures some revenue from other assessments that are already out there. So that is, and then on the last page, my part of the spreadsheet on page 9, on top of page 9, you'll see some transfers that come out of the TAM account, which is the Telephone Access Minnesota account. There's a base transfer that goes to the Commission of Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing of $300,000 per year. We've added $200,000 per year to that base amount, so now they're at $500,000 in the bill. And then we also have another transfer out of that fund to the Office of Enterprise Technology for some of the work that they do throughout state agencies to make their information more accessible. The last agency here is the Public Utilities Commission. We're funding them at base amount, $16 million. And then the last part of page 9 is just a general fund summary for that for the Commerce and PUC article. And that is it for the Environment, Ag, and Commerce part of the spreadsheet.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Senator
Britson. I assume we're going to be going through the smaller document we have here that's about an inch thick.
Yeah.
We're going to go through that as well, or otherwise I can ask my questions now.
Well Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think what Senator Tomassoni, well, I don't want to speak for Senator Tomassoni, that you were going to go through the other part of the spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Was that the intent, and then go through the bill? Is that okay, Senator Ingebrigtsen? Or?
That's fine.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to Mr. Mueller pointed out in the Game and Fish Fund that there was a difference in the on line
what page?
On page 4, line 108. There's a difference in our increase as compared to the governor's recommended increase, and this is not an indication of not wanting to fund these projects. What we were seeing in the budget book was a little bit of lack of detail, and it was basically stating that we were going to do more of what we did before, and one of the things that happened in the Game and Fish Fund in the past was that that the money was all spent and it was in the red, and that was the result. That was why that we had to increase fees last year so that they could raise some more money. And so this is just kind of a little bit of a conservative approach and a little bit of a prudent approach toward doing what the department wants to do, but not freeing up all the money right away, because I'm afraid that in 4 or 5 years we might be in the red again and have to raise fees again. And so the issue here is to slow down the expenditure a little bit. And it's not so much as to try and say, no, you can't do that. It's just to say that, use the money, but let's be a little bit cautious. So that's the rationale behind it, just so people want to know. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jensen will now go on to the spreadsheet and economic development. I want to point out to the committee that there's the competitive grant programs that were initiated last year were put in place as a result of many of the funding streams that are within the deed budget, and many of the job-creating programs that are within the deed budget. And it seemed to me that the competitive grant program did its job and came up with recommendations for the various programs that are in there and recommended money. And the people who were recipients of the competitive grants would have had to apply again this year. So I thought that if they actually qualified for the competitive grant money the last time, why make them go through all the application process again, and why make deed go through all the screening process again? Let's award them the same amount of money that they got in the competitive grant for the next 2 years, and let the department monitor them to see what kind of results they're getting. So it would take away a whole bunch of paperwork on both on the part of the groups that were applying, as well as on the part of the department themselves. And in a couple of instances, there's going to be money for groups that received money in the past and either didn't get as much or didn't get anything. And so we're trying to make this as comprehensive a bill as we can and create as many jobs as we possibly can and keep people in the pipeline. So I'll let Mr. Jensen then explain the spreadsheet that he has.
Okay, Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think it starts on page 10 of your handout. And this spreadsheet is laid out a little bit differently. It has the base for fiscal year 12 and 13. That's the biennium we're in. And then it has the governor's rec and the Senate rec. And then there should be a shaded column near the right-hand side which shows the differences. The Senate is spending more money than the governor in that column. So on lines 9 through 11, that's kind of the base operation of deed. There are community finance and business development.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jensen, is there anything on your spreadsheet that shows us what the Senate would be over or under the forecast?
Mr. Chairman, no, the spreadsheet is not laid out that way. It shows a difference from the governor's.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, on line 12 is the Minnesota Investment Fund. You can see there, as Senator Tomasoni explained, there's the $30 million that the governor is recommending, and the Senate accepted that recommendation. And on line 15 is a redevelopment fund. There's $2 million in this biennium for that purpose. The governor did not recommend that, but the committee thought that was a very important part of economic development, is to have some general fund cash for the projects that are being developed in the local community. So there's an additional $2 million. And that shows on that column for the Senate over and under the governor, the first $2 million. Also on line 17 was Enterprise Minnesota, which is also an economic development program. The governor did not recommend money for that, but the committee thought $400,000 would be the appropriate number. And then on the competitive grants, starting on line 19 through 36. These are grants for businesses that create jobs and create businesses and increase marketing. You can see some of the small business development centers there on line 24 and 25. Metro Economic Development. And if you note, the administration and monitoring amounts go down. So we're spending less money on the monitoring for these projects, as Senator Tomasoni explained. Line 37 was the $25 million that the Senate accepted for the job creation, taking the place of the Job Z program. Line 39 is a business assessment and growth recommendation for basically the east side of St. Paul, where there's a larger minority community and they need some help to access state grants and federal grants. The film board is now part of DEED on lines 41 through 45. The Jobs Production Fund has received kind of sporadic appropriations over the years, so we're recommending $10 million and putting that in the base. That would be on the columns on the right-hand side. That's the $10 million. Mr. Chairman, on page 11, basically at the top, those are just the program totals and totals for the appropriation in the amounts in the bill. Line 58 is a trade office program. The governor is recommending an increase of $1.5 million. You'll see that on line 60, and that's partly the global initiative to create three more offices around the world for increasing exports. Starting on line 63 is the workforce development program, down to line 89, and that's adult training programs. Again, fiscal year 12 is what was the direct appropriation, and fiscal year 13 is the competitive grant award. And those numbers are basically about the same. There are some increases and a couple of decreases, but the programs continue. Page 12, at the top, now we're into the Workforce Development Fund, and this is for the youth programs. These were continued, a slight increase, Boys and Girls Club. And again, you can see on line 99, we expect the monitoring cost to go down because we're making a competitive grant direct appropriations. Chairman, on line 106, we have a jobs and entrepreneur training program. This is, I believe, going to be processed through the African American Center, and there'll be some other locations besides Minneapolis. Lines 107 is a labor market data publications, and this is to make better use of the federal labor statistics so that people who go through community college or graduate from high school or a four-year college have a better idea of what the jobs are out there so they don't waste their 4 years of expenses. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, on line 113 is a general support for DEED, and lines 119, there was an increase from the governor's recommendation. This is extended employment for people who have mental illness, a $1 million increase, and that's carried forward into the base. State services for the blind is at the bottom of page 12. And totals for DEED are on page 13 at the top. Lines 138, the Science and Technology Authority, the governor's recommending getting rid of that office and the authority. The Housing Finance Agency is on page 13, if you're looking at lines 140. 143 is the Jobs and Housing Growth Initiative. The governor recommended $10 million. Senate is recommending $5 million more of that, and that's for helping subsidize jobs or subsidize housing where there are jobs available, but there's no housing around the state. Mr. Chairman, those are all one-time appropriations, and the base for housing goes back to the original base. On lines 146, the Senate is recommending a $4 million increase for supportive services for homeless people. Lines 148, an increase of $2 million for rental assistance for mentally ill people. The Housing Trust Fund, the base numbers, this recommendation is a $2 million increase. On line 151, the governor was recommending $2 million increase. The recommendation here is for another $1 million increase for the $3 million for that program. And that's for students who have to move a lot between communities, between schools. And the thought was that if they could stay in the school system for a school year, they would do much better. Line 152 is the reentry rental assistance. The governor recommended $1 million. The recommendation here is for another $1 million. So you can see in that column there, it's a $1 million increase over the governor. This is for people who might be coming out of the correctional institutions and don't have a job, but they could find a rental place, and if they can have some subsidy for several months, they could maybe keep their job and become a better part of the community. Line 157 is the preservation of affordable rental housing. The recommendation is for $1 million more each year for that base program, and then it's partly reallocated to owner-occupied for rehabilitation and for rental rehabilitation. And those numbers are moved down to lines 163 and 167. Also on the sheet, you can see on line 160 and 169, there's some reallocation of federal dollars into this program, about $8 million for the biennium. So the rehab program and to keep affordable rental available for lower-income people should be about the same amount of money. The agency total, the governor was recommending $89 million. This recommendation is for $30 million over that. The governor's recommending $13 million, and this adds $17 million. So it's a $30 million increase for the Housing Finance Agency. Explore Minnesota Tourism is at the bottom of page 13. This is where the governor was recommending a $15 million increase. The recommendation is to have that $15 million, but there's a small set-aside for the Northern Lights International Music Festival.
And Mr. Jensen, on tourism, isn't that offset in the tax bill with a car rental tax?
Mr. Chairman, I think we'd have to ask the tax committee, but for our purposes, it was just a direct appropriation.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, on page 14, labor and industry, lines 184 is continuing of Inland Center grant. On line 192, there's a small reduction in fees. If you were if you owned a wind farm of which had 100 turbines on it, you were paying $35,000 to have it inspected. And because all the electrical motors are the same in most of those farms, the proposal is to reduce that inspection fee from $35,000 down to about $12,000 or $14,000. So you can see this would save that industry a little bit of money. On line 199 is a proposal to expand into the high schools some safety programs dealing with employee safety. On lines 208 to 211, the Office of Combative Sports is now in Labor and Industry, and those are all fees from the industry that showing there. Mr. Chairman, on page 15 is the Bureau of Mediation Services. The governor had recommended some additional mediators on line 221 and some improvements in their case management system, and that was accepted. The Workers' Comp Court of Appeals is on line 225, and they have a similar increase for their case management system and some retirement costs there. On line 239 is the only general fund revenue loss in the economic development. Proposal is to forgive part of the loan payments coming from the River Center in St. Paul, up be $1 million in the next biennium. The following biennium, the loans would be, the loan payment to the state would be forgiven, but the loan payment by the lessees would continue, and that money has to be used to fix up the River Center instead of giving St. Paul a windfall as such. Mr. Chairman, the rest of those are just total for economic development. You can see the target was met, $296 million.
So, Mr. Chairman, I have an author's amendment if you would like to put it on the bill right now. It's an A8 amendment.
Well, did you want to go through the bill first, then we'll take amendments? What's your preference?
Well, this is the first committee this bill's been introduced into, and so this is just putting it in the shape that
okay.
I would like it in, so if that's
all right.
Okay.
If you prefer that.
And this is the A8 amendment.
All right, I forgot the A8 amendment. We can have that distributed, and we can wait till we get that to committee members.
I'm sorry, I stepped out of the room here for the last part of the presentation. This is I see it as on or under target numbers here. I think it's on target numbers.
On target.
Okay, we've had the amendment distributed, Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, it's technical in nature. There's a change for the housing. There's a change for a fee on some trails, and there's some. Projects related to the production tax on taconite and some language that goes along with that also. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move the A8 amendment and put the bill in the shape that I would like it.
Okay. And, Senator Tomasoni, you've introduced this as a new bill, so
yes.
In effect this is an author's amendment.
Correct.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? If not, all is in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, how would you like to proceed? We can have the bill, the language in the bill explained now, although it matches up pretty good with the spreadsheet. But it depends what you want to do, Mr. Chairman, or what the committee would like to do.
Well, it might be a nice idea to
explain the bill.
Explain some of what's in the bill.
Okay.
I don't mean to be unduly burdensome on you,
I'm fine with that, Mr. Chairman. Maybe the committee's just fine on voting it out of here. I don't know.
Well, I'm not sure, Senator Tomasoni.
Senator Miller just moved it, so.
Mr. Chairman, members, Greg Knapp, Senate Council Research and Fiscal Analysis. There are 9 articles in the bill. I'll walk you through quickly articles 1 through 4 and explain briefly article 9. And then Ms. Doyle Fontaine can go through the economic development articles 5 through 8. But most of what you have here in Article 1 are the appropriations to the Environment and Natural Resources Agencies, and most of the riders are based. I'll try to point out a few differences from the past. 5.6, there's a rider dealing with peat-based products for control of oil spills. In Subdivision 3 for the Pollution Control Agency for air. And I'll go through this quick. If people want to slow me down, go ahead, or questions. And then there's for the air, if you look on page 6, line 4, you see that $300,000 increase that Mr. Mueller mentioned for the purchase of mobile monitoring equipment. Subdivision 4, the land, that those are just base riders for the remediation fund. Subdivision 5, environmental assistance across media. We've got the SCORE block grants. That's a base rider. A number of these things are just base riders that we carry every 2 years. Also, I want to point out on 8.3, Mr. Mueller mentioned the biomonitoring. That's the rider for the biomonitoring. It includes Senator Sieben's provision on the PFCs. And then the 8.13, that's the transfer for the Environmental Quality Board to the Pollution Control Agency. The 8.17, that's the money for Office of Administrative Hearings. We'll see in Article 9 that the program is being transferred for creation of sanitary districts. On 8.27, there's a study. There was a $25,000 in the spreadsheet of Mr. Mueller's. And this is to look at a statewide recycling refund program for beverage containers. And then, Mr. Chair, 9.15, we've got the money for the silica sand, additional duties, silica sand mining in the Act. That's coming from the Environmental Fund. 9.24 is kind of a base rider on grants. In 10.4, we've got the remediation fund transfer. During the year, most of the money goes into the environmental fund that's collected, and then there's a transfer made to the remediation fund from that. And then now we're getting into Department of Natural Resources, Section 4. These are generally based riders on the Iron Ore Cooperative and Minerals Management Research, and also money from the State Forest Suspense Account. And then there's an extension of appropriation on 11.34 for the land records management that the department requested. Subdivision 3 is ecological and water resources. Again, these are our standard riders, including, but there's an increase on 12.28 for the Mississippi Headwaters Board that was in Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet. And then we got Red River Mediation. All of these are our standard base riders. And then forest management, we've got subdivision 4. Mr. Mueller talked about the increase. But generally the riders in here are base riders for how that money is spent. And there's nothing new here. Subdivision 5 and parks and trails, again, we've got a number of base riders from the water recreation account for accesses, grants to local units of government from the lottery in lieu. There is on 16.15, this is something, generally the cross-country ski account money is spent on grant and aid trails. The department is requesting some money for state trails. And then there's an extension of a grant on 16.27. There was some lottery and lieu money that was appropriated in 2009. My understanding that this is the city of White Bear, that they need an extension of that to use that grant. Subdivision 6 is Fish and Wildlife Management. And these are just base riders in Fish and Wildlife Management. Mr. Mueller talked about the dollars, but we don't have specific riders for the additional dollars. And then in Subdivision 7 is enforcement, and these are a number of base riders, except for there's going to be a rider for this program for the grants to county sheriffs for aquatic invasive species enforcement. And that is on... Let me find it here. That's actually on page 19.33. That's a new rider. Otherwise, these are base riders for the various programs and enforcement, including the grant programs to local enforcement of natural resource laws. Subdivision 7 is operation support. Nothing really new there. The zoo money that you see there, that's from the lottery in lieu account. Board of Water and Soil Resources, these are a number of base riders for their grant programs. Block grant program, the grants to soil and water conservation districts, the wetland conservation act implementation. Those are, again, all base riders. And then, Mr. Chair and members, the one additional one is Mr. Mueller mentioned his spreadsheet is on 22.14. That's for the additional money that was requested by the governor. Section 6 is the Metropolitan Council. Those are base riders. Some of their money comes from the general fund. Some comes from the lottery and loot account, and that just spells that out. Conservation Corps Minnesota, that's a base rider on the money appropriated from the Natural Resources Fund. Basically, they said they work on an agreement with the commissioner on what projects they'll use out of they'll use the money for out of that fund. The Zoo Board, that's, again, the base rider on the revenue deposited. That's the lottery and loot money going to the Minnesota Zoo. Section 9, no riders, the Science Museum of Minnesota. Section 10 is the adjustment to the transfers that was mentioned by Mr. Mueller for the transfer back into the closed landfill investment fund. So there's some changes made on page 24 for that. And I'll go through briefly. Article 2 is a number, there's quite a few language items. Section 1 deals with product stewardship. Section 2, there's a federal law compliance. Section 3, this was Mr. Mueller mentioned the money for the utility licenses. Section 4, this was an exchange of road easements that was in Senator Saxhog's forestry bill. Section 5, this is was recommended by the agency. It's non-trail use registration for snowmobiles. If they're not going to use a trail, this is a reduced fee for those people who registered snowmobiles under that. Section 6 and 7 are just conforming amendments to that. Section 8 deals with changing the forest for the Matthew Lowry Trail. And then Section 9, Mr. Mueller mentioned the state park reservation system. That's combined with that. Section 10 allows a person in a state park, as long as if they have the federal annual pass for U.S. military and their dependents, without purchasing a state park permit. The LaSalle Lake provision deals with basically you only need to have the permit if you're using the part of it. There are a number of other acres of land that are part of that recreation area that are used for hunting and other activities. Section 12, that's a very technical amendment on the fees. Section 13, again, that's dealing with that state park reservation system. User fee and validity, that's a duplicate pass for cross-country ski. And now we get in, well, Section 15, I'll talk about that just briefly. That just allows transfers from the suspense account to the forest management investment account on a quarterly basis rather than an annual basis. They feel like they can manage it better. Section 16 deals with school forests and allows, it provides some language on what happens when tax forfeited land is transferred over. We'll see some languages in the tax forfeiture law later in this article that provide for it. Then also the monitoring and reporting on this for the agency. And now we're going to get Section 17. There's a whole number of sections here dealing with our timber sales law. And I'm not going to go through all the details on this. This has gone through the process. So that's page 32, 33, 34, including some changes in the fees, but basically it's kind of a repackaging of the fees. The debarment section on section 28. The rest of these are really a lot of very technical changes on how the sales are made, and also to update language as far as the process and what is required of the permit holder when we sell a permit for state timber. So on page 38, 39,
Chair.
40.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf, maybe you can help, or maybe Senator Saxhog can help with the debarment section here. Section 28, it's new language here with regards to trespassing, I believe. And I'm doing that a little bit to slow you down, Mr. Knopf. I just wanted to read the bottom part of it. But how is that going to work? This is new language. I don't remember any discussion on this.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this was part of Senator Saxhog, and it has gone through the Judiciary Committee. And this would basically, it says if they've been convicted of gross misdemeanor or felony-level criminal willful trespass, theft, fraud, or antitrust violation involving timber, then they can be debarred from applying from bidding on timber permits from the state.
So again, thank you, Mr. Chair. So it has to do with trespassing on state properties or forestry properties, violations of such.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, yes. I mean, it's basically, as long as it was timber-related,
Right. Got it. Thank you.
And then, Mr. Chair, I'll get back to it. It's on page 38, 39. I don't think there's anything really to talk about. Section 42, starting on page 40, this is some changes in security deposits, and we're the department, and basically they've kind of reworked how they're going to handle security for the timber permit. Section 43, that's a timber development option. 44 is really kind of a rewrite of a repealed section later on how that, and this basically allows a timber holder access to get onto the property for logging roads and landings prior to the permit being fully secured. Section 45, assignment of auctions. These are just very technical changes, mostly related to the language that is being changed in the bill. Same with Section 48, 49. Section 50, 51. I won't go into too much detail on this. This was all, it has been heard in the policy committees of the Senate. And that goes through Section 56 on the top of page 47. And then in Section 57, you get a definition of scram mining. And then you'll see in Section 58 that definition is used. Basically, it says that the scram mining permit is the same as it would be for iron ore taconite, the term of the permit. And scram mining, if people want to read the definition, basically it's going after old stockpiles and tailings basins to recover those minerals. And then Section 59, Senator Tomasoni mentioned this, the department wanted to charge for access to this. This basically says, consistent with the Data Practices Act, a person shall not be required to pay a fee to access it, and that they have to keep the library open during regular business hours. Section 60, this deals with oil spills. It basically allows a rehabilitator with a federal permit to not have to also get a state permit when they're transporting or possessing wildlife that's been affected by the oil spill. Section 61, this is a rewrite of the wastewater laboratory certification. Currently in the Department of Health, this is being transferred over to PCA. And this is the language that puts that in place, the language for them to operate the certification program. Section 62 is a report language, just very detailed, very simple. And 50.32 is the only change. That's a consolidated report reference. Section 63 was mentioned. There's one product stewardship program left in the bill. There were three that were requested by the administration. And this would have the product stewardship program for the architectural paint sales in the state. And it basically requires them to provide that stewardship and then apply a stewardship fee. And the requirement on sale, if you look on 52.25, is that after July 1, 2014, or 3 months after plan approval, whichever sooner, that you can't sell or offer for sale architectural paint unless the producer participates in an approved stewardship plan. And this is that's quite a bit of language in here about the responsibility of various entities, including local governments who become part of this. And that's on subdivision 15. I do want to point out that on 56.21 to 56.24, this is a city, county, or other public agency that participates in a product stewardship program must report for the first year of the program to the agency using the reporting form provided by the agency on the cost savings as a result of participation and describe how the savings were used. That question did come up in division, so I wanted to make sure I point out that there is something in here for them to report on what they're going to use the savings on. And there is an administrative fee that the agency will charge for it. It was in Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet. You could see it was pretty minor. And we do on 57.15, we do provide for 2 years of statutory appropriation of that. Section 64 is just a report on that program. 65 is largely technical, related to making a report every other year rather than every year. Same as Section 66. And 67 is just a totally technical, basically removing some obsolete language on the closed landfill investment fund. Section 68, and these are some provisions that did go through the process. They were also recommended by the administration, dealing with the petroleum tank fund. This would basically allow for environmental covenants to be part of a corrective action. Section 69, again, this is also giving the authority, the agency, the authority for real personal property, including easements or covenants, on part of the Petrol Fund Statute, Section 70, disposition of property acquired for corrective action. And these are modeled after what we have right now under our Superfund law. Section 71 is just a report change. 72 is related to the corrective actions under the Petrol Fund. This is in the tank regulation, underground and above ground storage tank regulation of the Pollution Control Agency. 73 is silica sand mining model standards and criteria. This is, I think it was mentioned in the spreadsheet that, and earlier also in Senator Tomasoni's overview, that the state will be developing model standards and criteria for local governments to use if they want to. We're also going to provide, if you look on page 64, line 31, a silica sand technical assistance team to local units of government. Section 74, this is an amendment division. This is basically says that if you're excavating 20 or more acres to a mean depth of 10 feet or more, and you're not required to do an EIS or environmental impact statement, that you do have to do an environmental assessment worksheet, and this is for 1 year while a lot of the studies are going on. Mr. Chair, in Section 75, this is a technical assistance to ordinance and permit library to be maintained by the PCA. Section 76 through 79 are just the transfer of the EQB, or the Environmental Quality Board, to the Pollution Control Agency. Section 79, this is dealing with the school forests. 79 and 80 both deal with school forests, and it provides that for tax forfeited lands that are transferred. The general rule for tax forfeited lands is that they, after 30 years, the use deed or the reverter kind of goes away. But for the school forest, what this would say is that we're going to continue that use deed until it, they basically, as long as they use it as a school forest, it does not need to be transferred back to the state. But at any time in the future, if it's not used for that, it would be transferred back to the state. Basically, the state holds it in trust for the taxing district. Intermediate timber sales 81, that's dealing with tax forfeited lands. It basically puts in a similar section as to what the state has for its timber sales. So the counties, when they're selling timber and tax forfeited land, could use a similar option. Section 82 deals with petitions from Hennepin County. It authorizes Hennepin County to petition the Board of Water and Soil Resources for discontinuance of the Hennepin County Soil and Water Conservation District. And it has a process for that and criteria for the board to make the decision. Section 83, again, reports to the legislature on the landfill abatement, metropolitan landfill abatement. Section 84, this deals with Halls Island and basically notwithstands some rules of the DNR to allow for the completion of the island. Section 85 allows for some additional land to be added to the North Mississippi Regional Park in Minneapolis. And then 86, this is a provision that was in the timber bill that allows for a permit cancellation of the specific balsam fir timber permits. And it basically at the request of the permit holder, the commissioner can cancel and release that permit. The rulemaking authority on the next one is very technical. It deals with the wildlife rehabilitator permits, or the exemption for them, telling DNR to change their rules to reflect that. Section 88 deals with changing DNR rules so that paddle boards, because current law says they have to put it in the same manner as a canoe, kayak, and they really can't do that on a paddle board. So it's telling them to change their rules. 89 are rules on silica sand. This is basically having PCA, DNR, Health, and the EQB amending their rules relating to silica sand. I won't go into detail unless people want more information about that. Section 90 allows an extension to until March 1st, 2015, of interim ordinances for silica sand projects. And this is current law. They're allowed 2 years. This would allow an additional additional time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you go back to the rules on silica sand and give us a little more detail?
No problem. And Mr. Chair and members, paragraph A, this is for the Pollution Control Agency to adopt rules pertaining to the control of particulate emissions from silica sand mines. There has been concern over the amount of silica sand in the air through some of these processing and transportation of the material. Paragraph B deals with the DNR adopting rules for the reclamation of silica sand mines. DNR does reclamation of underground mines right now, or they could be above ground, but basically for minerals. These are a surface interest, the sand part of it, and considered it. So these have been done at the local level, and this has DNR involved in the reclamation. Paragraph C deals with the Department of Health. They're supposed to adopt air quality advisories. These aren't really rules, but they're advisories for silica sand. And then paragraph D is the Environmental Quality Board taking a look at its rules under a quicker process using the good cause exemption to look at changing some of the standards under the environmental review rules. If there's no questions, Mr. Chair, I explained Section 90. Section 91 has several repealers. Paragraph A are the repeals in the timber sales laws, and these were again part of the timber bill. And it's more a matter. These were either added to other sections or recodified and changed a little bit as I went through them earlier, or already included. Paragraph B is a repeal of a 2011 law dealing with the forest tree nurseries. Putting additional restrictions on them above and beyond what's in the statutes, and this would bring it back to the statutory guidance for how those are operated. Paragraph C, and my copy of the bill has all the repealers at the end. I assume members do too, but these are a number of rules that the Pollution Control Agency has asked the legislature to repeal on their behalf, and I won't go into detail on those, but there are a number of rules that they consider obsolete. And, Mr. Chair, I'll go on to Article 3. These are the agriculture appropriations. And you'll see Subdivision 2, Protection Services. Those are just the standard riders, including the money for the livestock damage from wolves and also crop damage from elk. And then agriculture marketing and development. These are the standard riders. For the programs in there. The one thing you won't see in here is the sustainable ag grants, because those are being moved over to the agri program. And then in Subdivision 4, you see bioenergy and value added. Sure. That's the agri program.
Hold on, please. Thank you so much.
Just one quick question, if I could. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Knopf, with regards to the deprivation of crop damage here. Do we have something? anything here for the gray wolf and all? Did I miss something, or is that not in this division?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, actually 78.17 to 78.22 is for crippled animals, and that statute is specifically related to the gray wolf.
And Senator Ingebrigtsen, a follow-up?
Yes, and a follow-up. Thank you. So $50,000 for the biennium. What's been the history there? Is that about the history of what we've been expending?
Well, testify,
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen. It's varied over time. I think we were told in division that they didn't really need an increase there right now. That they think they're pretty good. One of the issues is when they were an endangered species, it was more difficult for individuals to take wolves that were causing problems on their farm. And under the state management now, it's a little easier for an individual to take it. The thought is that as we go down wolf management, that the hope is that this will not be needed as much as it has been in the past.
And Mr.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Mr. Chair, thank you. And just for information, there was some federal dollars attached, and that's gone away since they're off the Endangered Species Act.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, that's in the DNR section of this, and that's dealing with the predator controllers. The feds were paying for the predator controllers in the past, and now the state will have to, but the state is doing that under its wolf management plan.
Right.
Senator, any other follow-up?
Thank you.
Thank you. You can continue.
Mr. Chair, members, the bioenergy and value added, that's the agri program that Mr. Mueller mentioned, and you can see on 80.16 the $15 million. And then on 80.31, we've got some additional language on the microloan program, additional assistance for those people who are eligible for that pilot program. Section, I mentioned this earlier, 81.1, you see that they're making money available for the sustainable agriculture grants. And then on 81.4, that's the money for NextGen. It's making money available. And then on 82.8, Mr. Mueller went through in the spreadsheet and talked about some of the specific items, and this just lays those out. Each of those items, well, we went through the numbers in the spreadsheet, so unless people want any more detail about that, I'll move on. And then, Mr. Chair, administration and financial assistance, that these are base riders. We've got the Dairy Development Program, Northern Crops Institute, Livestock Breeders, MLC, the Leadership Council, aid payments for county fairs, the Poultry Association, Turf Seed Council, Second Harvest for milk purchases. These have been carried for a number of years in the agriculture appropriations. And then you'll see, same with the mental health grants on 86.13, 86.24, that's the additional money from the surcharge on fertilizer for research. Section 4 is the Board of Animal Health. No riders there. Section 5 is AURI. We went through the numbers on the spreadsheet. And then, Mr. Chair, Section 6 and Section 7 are both allowing the department to spend money in the manner in which it was given to them, either from the feds or from private industry. Section 8 is the pesticide education and training. Mr. Mueller mentioned there was $100,000 per year for updating the manual, and you'll see an uncodified section later. Sections 9 and 10 deal with the commercial animal waste technician. I'm not going to go into detail on that one unless people want to do that, but it basically changes the regulation and the fees for that. It was actually asked for by the industry. 10 also deals with that. Section 11 is, the pesticide applicator training. This is a requiring report by December 31st, 2017, and then also an interim report in 2015. And then I'll go briefly through commerce and energy. I don't think there's a lot to report there. And Article 4, we've got all the basic riders for the programs in the Department of Commerce, including enforcement. And you'll see the weatherization stuff that Mr. Mueller mentioned on 94.13. Section 5, and I think it's Section 7, This is going to allow transfer from the automobile theft prevention account to the insurance fraud prevention account if there are balances left in that account. Section 6 is the fee that Mr. Mueller mentioned. You can see that in 95.30 for the appointment of an agent. Section 7, again, I mentioned that. That's the transfer of money of unobligated balances. You can see in 97.13. Section 8.
Mr. Chairman. Chairman.
Hold on. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we just go back to that auto theft? Point out the page and what you're doing.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there's two places. Section 5 and 94.26, you'll see that's the account itself. It allows for the money that's transferred in to be spent. But the big change is probably, I was just getting to that, in 97.12. That's where it says that if there's any unobligated balance in the auto theft prevention account, that the commissioner can at the end of a fiscal year, the commissioner can transfer that balance to the insurance fraud prevention account.
Senator Stump, any follow-up?
So it was my understanding in the state governments, and I know Senator Saxhog isn't here, but I think there was approximately about $3 million raised with that surcharge or whatever they call it, and the first $1.5 million or so went into the state's general fund, and the second half of it went into the fraud prevention account, which a lot of it got transferred to local county attorneys, law enforcement, etc. So what does this do, and how does that interact with that?
Well, Mr. Knapp?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, what this does is it says if there is any money left, not the general fund. The general fund portion will continue to go to the general fund, and the 1.3 or 1.5 that goes into the auto theft prevention account, if there is any money left at the end. I think Senator Metzen had a bill that was going to try to transfer the money to go into the general fund. What this does is it just says that if there's any money left, they can transfer it over to the insurance fraud. Don't know if there will be any left. As you said, a lot of the money is going to be going out to locals, but this would allow that transfer in the Commissioner
Stump.
Okay. Why is the language in both bills?
I see we have another person approaching the podium, so please identify your name for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Dan Mueller, Senate Fiscal Analyst. Senator Stumpf, what's in the State Department's bill is a totally different issue. It's given the Department of Revenue some authority to look over the fees, but it doesn't have anything to do with the issue that's in our bill of the transfer between the two accounts. So they're totally different issues that are in the two bills, and I've talked to the staff on the State Department's bill, and it's just more of an oversight authority what's in the state government bill, and this is a totally different issue allowing a transfer between two different accounts.
Same money, though.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, yes, it's the same money, but it doesn't affect the money that goes in the in the general fund, and it does not affect the amount of money that will be available for auto theft prevention.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, Section 8, this deals with utilities, and it allows or basically it prescribes in more detail how costs of service are supposed to be allocated on with certain investor-owned utilities if you have at least 50,000 customers but no more than 200,000. My understanding is it only applies to two utilities in northern Minnesota, northwestern Minnesota in the state. And Mr. Chair, and then starting with Section 9, we have a number of sections. I won't go into detail. I think Senator Tomasoni and Mr. Mueller talked a little bit about the money. This is the Made in Minnesota program for solar photovoltaics. This basically creates a production incentive program for that. I won't go into detail, but maybe Senator Tomasoni, if you have questions about how that works. Section 14, we've got a couple of sections dealing with the Office of Broadband Development. This is just a cross-reference to that office.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Newman.
Switch the gavel. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you please go back to Section 10 and talk about the solar energy incentive account a little bit more? It seems to me that there was a fair amount of money involved in that program, and I'd just like to have a little better explanation, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, and I'll do my best. What this is referring to is the Made in Minnesota Solar Energy Production Incentive Account, and it's coming from SNP payments, and it's coming from the Renewable Development Account, and the maximum it can generate each year is $15 million. The renewable energy account is probably going to do about 7.5 to 8 of that, and then the SIP program will do the rest. It's set up in such a way that I have heard from both the co-ops and the municipals that they're okay with the way it's set up, and the other part of it is that Xcel has told me that they are fine with the renewable energy money being spread across the state. So the idea is that there's an incentive for people to install solar, and then there's a incentive to the cost of what they are getting or what they're paying for the solar, so they can make it more affordable. So that's the idea, I think what you have here is a peace in the valley type of agreement, and there is not a mandate, and there's not the tax that you've heard about. So that stuff isn't in here.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. And I have some electrical co-ops in my district that have expressed a good deal of concern about solar energy and the mandates and so forth. Is this section something that you believe is going to is easing those mandates, or is it part of those mandates on electrical co-ops?
Mr. Chairman, what's going on here is that they're getting credits for their SIP money, so that they are okay with what's going on in this particular bill, is my understanding. And I you can maybe understand that, explain that a little bit better.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, I think the concern that I'm hearing you express is more in a different bill that we're going to be hearing next Monday in front of in the committee. So, there's an energy bill that does have some. This does not have mandates. It allows for credit for solar for the SIP money, but it does not have mandates in it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Senator DeVille.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and we've had some discussion and consideration on this. I just need to state for the record that this isn't actually conservation in the classic sense. It's about generating additional energy. So what I do hope is that at some point in the not-too-distant future, we don't keep on using SIP dollars for purposes like this, because this is not conservation and efficiency improvement. It's additional generation. It does have some effect upstream on demand on baseload, sure, but SIP really is about conserving the generation, construction, et cetera, of additional energy. SIP is a pot of money that kind of lays around that's an easy target to use for things like this. It has some relationship, but, we look to SIP dollars too frequently, and we're not going to be getting the cost effectiveness out of SIP that we've laid out in statute when we passed the bill a few years ago. So support the bill, and I understand what Senator Tomasoni is trying to accomplish, but in the coming years, I'd like to find other sources for the efforts like this than SIP.
And this is only a 5% of their SIP, so it's not
correct,
a big amount.
But, we nick it here and there, and, we use it from the investor-owned, spread it across the state. Thanks.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, you mentioned that some of these resources would go towards incentives for homeowners. How would that be?
I think, Mr. Chairman, if I got it right, that it's set up in such a way that about 50% will go for homeowners and 50% will go for commercial.
Thank you.
Senator Ingersoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I'm glad Senator Newman asked the question here to slow this down a little bit and talk about this solar energy. Senator Tomasoni, and we can talk later, but I'm noticing through the budgeting process here, the governor doesn't seem to be interested in solar energy. However, we are spending a lot of it money on that. I guess certainly I can call the governor's office and ask him why he's not that interested in it. But I just wonder why the real difference there. I just don't see the excitement coming out of his administration for solar energy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm not sure he's not excited about it. It might be in another bill, and we're going to be hearing a bill on Monday that you'll be seeing. And I'm not sure if that's a governor initiative or if it's just a Senator Marty initiative. But it's another movement toward doing some other things on solar energy that hopefully we're getting peace in the valley on that too eventually here. So.
Let's go.
Chair, we were talking a little about office of broadband. There's just a cross reference. Then you'll also see on section 15, there's money for the LCC for the commission's website, and then also on section 16, you'll see the expenses of the LCC for providing captioning. Mr. Mueller mentioned that coming out of the TAM fund. Section 17 creates the office of broadband development in the Department of Commerce. Section 18, it increases the amount of the petroleum fee. Mr. Mueller mentioned this briefly in a spreadsheet. You look on 107.14, the amount of money that's retained by the Department of Commerce from the fee. It's a dollar for every 1,000 gallons. And then also Mr. Mueller mentioned that of the 93 cents, that at least 5% must be used to install renewable energy equipment in households that are eligible for weatherization assistance. Section 19 is a broadband strategy report. Section 20 is requiring any money used in this bill to purchase solar photovoltaic modules that the money must be spent on ones that are made in Minnesota. Section 21 deals with a value of on-site energy storage study. 22 is a value of solar thermal study. And, Mr. Chair, before Ms. Doyle-Fontaine goes on to Article 5, I just want to mention Article 9. It's 40 pages for $125,000. it's a lot of language, and it's not a lot of money involved in it. This is the I mentioned earlier the sanitary district. If you look at Article 9, it starts on page 179. There's 39 or 40 pages of language that deals with repealing the existing authority under PCA, recreating it for the Office of Administrative Hearings. There were some changes made in the process, but in the powers of the district, we actually looked this up just to make sure that the powers of a district do not change as far as taxing authority and that sort of thing. So,
Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, back up a little bit. The study on the benefits of solar thermal. What can you refresh me a little bit on that? I don't remember a lot about that provision.
I'm going to need help on that one, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's just at Section 22 of Article 4, and that was part of Senator Thomasoni's original bill, as I remember. And it basically, it's they're contracting an independent consultant to look at the cost and benefits of expanding an installation of solar thermal projects in Minnesota.
And is that in houses or businesses? And there's a solar thermal panel manufacturer in my area, the state, and I'm just interested in how
Mr. Chairman
them or
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrum, it does say in residential and commercial buildings in the state, so it's supposed to be for a broad study on both.
I can talk to you further offline. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Stump.
Just a curious question. A number of years ago, we had legislation that got to be quite popular in trying to promote Minnesota businesses. And a lot of legislation was tagged with kind of made in Minnesota. And then we ended up running into trouble with other states where when we said that it had to be made in Minnesota, then they counteracted and said that they would, do the same thing in their states. Is there any feedback on what is going on? Or is this becoming a
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, I haven't heard any. The idea here is that if this is being financed by taxpayers' dollars and the incentives are coming from taxpayers' dollars, then the panel should be at least made in Minnesota so that the workers and the people of Minnesota benefit from the taxpayers' dollars. So I think that's the idea here.
Okay. It just seems like we run the risk, a little bit of a risk, if we I think where we got the avenue that we were going down is that it had to give vendors in the state preference, and maybe it's different where we're actually funding it or have state money in it. But I'm sure we'll find out over time.
Sure.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question about the sanitary districts. Is that transfer from PCA to the Office of Administrative Hearings, where did this idea come from? I'm really trying to figure out if this should have gone to state and local government or not, if it's in our jurisdiction, and I can't get an answer on that. So,
Mr. Chairman, I thought this did go through state and local government.
Such an interesting senator, topic. I don't even remember it.
There was a Senator Herb. There was an agency bill, a pollution control agency. Senator Herb carried it for the agency, and this was an initiative of the agency. They're concerned that they do so few of these that the whole process, they're not as familiar as the Office of Administrative Hearings. And I thought this went through a number of agencies. I'm trying to recall. It was Senate File 423, and there were a number of agency changes, and this was
423.
Senate File 423. I could be wrong, but I thought it did go through state and local. But there were a number of issues in it, including this. This was a second article in the bill.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, I know it went through. I'm just not sure. And Mr. Chair, I'm done. I don't know unless people have other questions about the sanitary district language. I think Ms. Doyle Fontaine can go through Articles 5 through 8 with you.
Okay. Ms. Doyle Fontaine.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, I'm Carlin Doyle Fontaine, Senate Counsel. So we're starting on page 109 and 110, Article 5. This is the Jobs and Economic Development Appropriation Totals. And on the top of 110, there are a few places in here that the author's amendment did make some changes to the totals. And I can point out those areas. Continuing on page, we're just looking at some appropriation totals on 110. And then over on page 111, at the top, there is this is the amount for the Minnesota Investment Fund. It would be $30 million over the biennium. And then on page 111, there is some particular language, a project that DEED has identified. This is some language that would exempt the project from the limitations that are included in the MIF statutes. And then that continues, the language continues over to page 112.
Mr. Chairman,
just on that clause, too, why is there such a wide window for the use of the general fund money? January 1st of 13 to June 30th of 2015.
Mr. Chair and members and Senator Stump, I believe DEED wasn't sure regarding some of the purchases that were going to be made. This was just a special, some special language they needed to allow the purpose of the loan to purchases made. I think that there was some, they weren't unsure of how long it would take for them to make some purchases for this particular transaction for this group.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, do you want to hear from DEED?
Well, it seems like a long time to tie the money up.
Hey, we get the.
We got somebody coming up.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McKinnon, Executive Director of Economic Development at DEED. The provision that the time frame in this provision is very typical to the transactions that we do within the Minnesota Investment Fund from a period of investment in a project. It's typically a two-year clause so that they have to spend the money, create the jobs, those types of things. It's very standard in most of our agreements that this takes place.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the testifier on page 110, very top line, 110.2, general, am I mistaken that there's a couple, three zeros missing in that first number? Or am I accurate? It doesn't add up to $201 million. I'm just wondering if we... If a mistake has been made, it should be $158 million instead of $158,000.
Which line?
I'm sorry, line 110.2.
Yeah, we'll do it. Mr. Chair, members, there was the technical amendment that is making some corrections
to
these totals.
Thank you. I'll look at that as you go along. Thanks.
It's not in there.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, if the total's not correct, I'll consult with Mr. Jensen and see, get the appropriate totals, and we can make that as a technical question along with the other amendment.
Mr. Chair, I was just combing through the numbers like I always do, and I happen to catch that.
Good work.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen thinks he's Danny Fredericks.
I'll speak to that.
Is that a comp? That was a compliment, right?
Pardon?
That was a compliment, right?
Sarah Sagtog was kidding. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members, I can continue on page 112, looking at line 112.19. This You'll see further on in the language that DEED is creating a new fund. It's the Job Creation Fund. This is money for the Job Creation Fund. In paragraph C, we have $1 million going to redevelopment, or that'd be $2 million for the biennium. On the bottom of page 112, we have appropriation for the Upper Minnesota Film Office and the Minnesota Film and TV Board, and these are the office expenses. These are all on the spreadsheet. I do not need to go over all this in detail, but I would continue on to page 113 and just there's some money for the remediation fund, a contaminated site cleanup. At the bottom of page 113 is the money for the film production jobs program. And then on pages 113 and 114 and continuing over on 115 to 116, this is all the business development competitive grant program. These are the pass-throughs that Mr. Jensen discussed. They were no longer doing the competitive grant under the Senate proposal.
So Senator Tomasoni, if I could just find out a little bit about the thinking of the committee in terms of the competitive grant program and where DEED is relative to that. Maybe we could have some, if there's somebody from...
Mr. Chairman, I haven't really heard any feedback from DEED, if you want to know the truth, so I'm assuming they don't mind doing this.
Okay, well, maybe...
I guess they could give me their opinion on it.
I thought we'd have somebody different from DEED, but...
you're stuck with me.
If the witness could please identify herself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Kim Mabine. I am the Director of Government Affairs at DEED.
And just so newer members here understand, Ms. Mabine used to be the committee administrator for this committee, but nice to have you. You're now on the other side of the table.
It's a different experience, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, regarding the competitive grant program, we have spoken with Senator Tomasoni regarding the grants both for business development training as well as workforce training, and the governor's budget reflects it as the competitive grant program, and so that's the official position of the department, but we are open to looking at the best way to move forward with these grants, both in the business development training side and the workforce training side.
So would it be fair that there's not an objection from DEED with the reworking of the governor's office with the reworking as Senator Tomasoni has done?
Well, there's some objection. You can characterize it as an objection, being that it's not in the governor's budget and the way that the governor has proposed to go forward with these grants. There's some definite positives to the grant process, the competitive process, and in the accountability and the way that we are able to then monitor the grants and then report on outcomes and return on investment. But we understand that there's been some problems with how some people have understood the grant process, been able to access the funds, the grant writing process, and we know there's some work to do there. So I think we're looking forward to continuing the conversation as this bill moves forward.
And Mr. Chairman, I might point out that the monitoring part is still in the bill, the department does still will still be monitoring and making sure that the outcomes are determine what the outcomes are and whether or not they should get another grant after this cycle.
Okay, thank you. Sir Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're on a break, if we could go back to the bottom of page 112, there's some money in there for Upper Minnesota Film Office and for Film and TV Board. I've heard that there is legacy money that is being kicked around for those kinds of programs. Is this different than legacy money?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, and continuing on in the spirit of moving forward more quickly, on the bottom of page 116, This is the workforce development programs and the pass-throughs that Ms. Babine just discussed regarding some competitive grants. There are also some riders in here that have been contained for a number of years for the Minnesota Youth Program and Youth Build on page 117. And then continuing over to page 118, these are some more pass-throughs that would have been or were part of the competitive grant program. Page 119 is also listing some of the groups that would receive money under the Senate bill. Page 120 also contains some more groups that are identified. There's also included a Senator Dietzick bill that was not part of competitive grants on paragraph S for the African Development Center. Page 121, there's a general support services for DEED, and for the trade office, there are a few new appropriations for some new initiatives for the trade office for STEP grants and the Minnesota Marketing Initiative. On page 121, subdivision 6, there is appropriations for vocational rehabilitation. On the bottom of 121, we have state services for the blind appropriation. Beginning on page 122, subsection 4, we have appropriations for housing finance agency for those programs, the challenge program. On page 123 to the Housing Trust Fund. On page 124, we have rental assistance for mentally ill, family homeless prevention, home ownership assistance.
Ms. Doyle Fontaine? No.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
On the challenge program, there's a blank appropriation.
Mr. Chair, members, that was also included
in the amendment?
In the amendment,
okay.
Yes. At the bottom of page 124, we have affordable rental investment, and that appropriation was changed just to reflect some reallocation amounts as well included in the amendment. On page 126, Senator Dibble had a bill, Senate File 811, and the subdivision 8 for housing rehabilitation and rental rehabilitation, this is where the reallocations come into play. And we also have money in subdivision 9 for HECAT and subdivision 10 for some capacity building grants, and there was additional money with it contained within the amendment that goes to the capacity building grants as well.
Okay. And we don't see the appropriation in the amendment.
I don't
that reference.
I don't see it either, Mr. Chairman. You might have missed that one. Another technical we got to do.
Mr. Jensen,
what that number is, we can maybe insert it. This one right here.
Chairman, members, that number I thought was in the amendment.
Oh, Mr. Chair, members, I
1,208,000 each year.
Okay. Mr. Jensen, if you could use the
mic. Mr. Chair, members, I have it. It's on line 122.15. It should be $1,208,000.
Okay, and that's not in the A8 amendment.
It's not
I'll
in
move
the
that,
amendment.
Mr. Chairman. If you need a motion, I can move that.
All right, so Senator Pappas moves the inclusion of that number, and again, that was
$1,208,000.
Okay, Mr. Senator Chair. Pappas moves inclusion of that number. Senator Ingebrigtsen, on that?
Page 122, line 15.
Yes. All right. If there's no further discussion on this Pappas motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Ms. Doyle Fontaine.
Mr. Chair and members, on page 126, we begin with the Department of Labor and Industry appropriations. On 127, we have appropriation for workers' compensation and continues to contain the Vinland Center. Subdivision 3, we have appropriations for labor standards and apprenticeship. And on page 128, we have workplace safety and general support for the Department of Labor and Industry. On 128, we also have the appropriations for Explore Minnesota Tourism. And this also discusses a few new initiatives for Explore Minnesota Tourism. On page 129, we have appropriations for the Bureau of Mediation Services and also discusses the new grants to area labor management committees in paragraph A, paragraph B. It includes appropriation for development of a new business case management system. On page 130, section 8, we have appropriation to the workers' compensation.
If I can go back to the Explore Minnesota Tourism, is there somebody from the office present?
Okay.
wanted to know if someone was referring to the
Mr. Chair, I'm Colleen Tollefson with Explore Minnesota Tourism.
Okay, thank you. I asked Senator Tomasoni earlier, am I correct or not correct that the new money for tourism is coming from a rental car tax?
Mr. Chairman, that is the governor's proposal. I'm aware that it's included in the House tax bill. I'm not aware of what's included in the Senate tax bill at this point.
Okay. And was that intended to be a dollar-for-dollar appropriation, the tax was going to meet the appropriation?
Mr. Chair, that is my understanding.
So what are you expecting? So it's a significant increase in the tourism money.
Yes.
Can you give us an idea of what's expected as a consequence?
Well, Mr. Chair, we have recently done a return on investment study, and the anticipation is that there's an 8-to-1 return on the investment from a promotional standpoint, and that each additional $1 million would generate another 1,000 jobs.
Okay, so are you looking at that in terms of jobs, or is there other kinds of spinoff, hotel, restaurant, advertising?
There's a significant additional economic spinoff, and that was the 8-to-1 figure. I actually, on just a moment, on each $1 million, we do have a figure. Of $84 in traveler spending, $22 million in income, $8 million in new state and local tax revenues in terms of each additional $1 million investment in promotion.
And any sense of how that translates into actual taxes returned to the state, as opposed to local taxes?
Mr. Chair, presently, leisure and hospitality, which is our tax category, generates roughly 17% of the state sales tax. I think we'd anticipate it would continue at that level.
So how much, roughly? If you were just a ballpark figure.
Mr. Chair, I don't think I can do that math in this committee. I can get it to you.
Yeah, if you could do that, we'd appreciate it. Okay, thank you. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I might ask questions, testifier, too, in terms of the leveraging of those dollars. You may have said it, but if you have $15 million a year, what do you anticipate in the leveraging of those dollars with the people involved in tourism?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sackhawk, we anticipate an 8-to-1 return.
No, well, I'm talking about, Mr. Chair, I'm talking about, let's say you're a resorter, and there's a program, and you're going to see X amount of advertising, and you're going to put that much advertising and more in. Is that what you're talking about, 8-to-1, or I think you're talking about the income that's going to come back? But
the 8-to-1 would be tax revenue to the state. Yeah.
And I'm talking about by leveraging, I'm meaning what additional marketing will come about because of this.
Well, we anticipate expanded marketing in other states, more placement in the markets we're in. Are you asking an economic question versus a?
Well, what I'm asking is if a large percentage of this $15 million is going to be for marketing Minnesota. How much will be coming out of the private sector in terms of marketing, too?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in our language, we are increasing the private sector match requirements as well. Previously, our private sector, we had an incentive fund of $500,000, and we were required to provide a 3-to-1 match. In the new proposal, there's a $1 million incentive fund, and we are required to provide a 6-to-1 match, of which 50% is cash, 50% can be in kind.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so the 8-to-1 ratio, what is the advertising Just curious. I'm not part of the tax committee, but business gets taxed on advertising, gets thrown under this blanket of the 5.5 reduction in sales tax blanket, what is that going to do to the 8-to-1 ratio? Is that going to certainly cut that for tourism?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't think I'm qualified to answer that. I can go back to our research analysts and see if they can analyze that.
Mr. Chairman? Senator Thompson. I have some numbers from the governor's budget proposal, and this says that nearly $69 million in state sales tax is collected, accounting for 17% of Minnesota's state sales tax. And it says an additional $7.5 million in advertising for tourism would generate an estimated $60 million in new state and local taxes, 7,600 jobs, $162 million in income, $587 million in traveler spending in Minnesota, and that was based on a 2012 study.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions on this?
Mr. Chair, members, then I believe we could start on Article 6. This is labor and industry article. The sections 1 through 14 are actually from a Senator Tomasoni bill that sets out a new process and definitions for elevator industry licensing structure. So that's sections 1 through 14, and there are many definitions on page 131 and 32. These are pretty technical about elevator work and limited elevator work, et cetera. Page 133, more definitions, and over to page 134. Section 14 talks about this is actually kind of the meat of that licensing structure, and it just sets out how the department will handling licensing for this sector. That continues over to page 137, 38, 39, to page 140, and beginning with section 15 on page 140, we have a number of provisions that were included in the governor's bill that Senator Dietzick carried. This is Senate File 1057. But a number of these also concern elevators as well, so to not be confused with the previous sections. This section 15 deals with some elevator permits, some clarifications. Section 16 specifies elevator inspection fees. So this was included in the governor's bill. Section 17 is also from Senate File 1057, and some clarifications regarding vertical reciprocating conveyors, that they're accepted for certain reasons. Section 18, this was also included in the Senator Tomasoni's bill for elevator licensing. Section 19 on the bottom of page 142.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Tomasoni, what precipitated this language or the bill coming forward that's now in your omnibus bill on elevators?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, it was an agreement amongst the elevator people that this was the way they wanted to do it.
Agreement for what? What was the purpose? I mean, what was the reason that was there problems in the industry that were happening that made this come about?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, no, I think this is just the way that they've been doing it. And they came to peace in the valley, and they said, "Let's get it into statute so that we all agree on how to do it." So there was electricians involved and elevator people involved, and so I can get someone to come up and explain it better if you want me to. But I know that this is one of those agreements that everybody's okay with.
Senator Tomasoni, could you just define what you mean by elevator people?
No.
Mr. Chair, were they going up or down?
Mr. Chair, fair question is then how about escalator people? Are they the same or are they a different subdivision?
Okay. All right.
I always think of things in terms of movie analogies, like the Invasion of the Body Snatchers, they were the pod people. So I never heard of elevator people before.
Mr. Chairman, the explanation I just got is that they're moving the language from the electrical code into its own code so that they have their own governing code. So, and this is what they've all agreed to. So. And I don't know if the words elevator people are in the statute or not.
All right. Well done, Senator Tomasoni. Okay, let's continue.
Mr. Chair, members, continuing then on page 142 and 143, sections 19 and 20. These are actually some changes that are necessary, as Senator Tomasoni just mentioned. These are provisions within the Minnesota Electrical Act, and so these make some conforming changes to separate out the elevator people from the Minnesota Electrical Act. So those are some conforming changes. Section 20 continues on page 143, 144, over to page 145. Section 21 is an additional change that is necessary with the new elevator licensing structure. Section 22 on page 146, this is from the governor's bill, Senate File 1057. This is a calculation of fees for utility interconnected wind generation installations. On page 147, this is also from the governor's bill, 1057. This removes the fee for accelerated review. Page 148, section 24, this clarifies and sets out plumbing fees. This is also from the governor's bill. Page 149, section 25, as mentioned earlier, I think Mr. Jensen mentioned that the Office of Combative Sports is now within the Department of Labor and Industry, and this is making some licensing fee changes to the license structure for combative sports. And that was within the governor's bill as well. Then we have some repealers, and all of these actually deal with the new elevator license structure. And it's just repealing some rules and some definitions that were included within the Minnesota Electrical Act. If there are no questions on that article, we'll continue to on page 150 with Article 7, Employment and Economic Development. The first section comes from a Senator Bonhoff bill, and there are a few provisions included in this article from Senate File 899, and this is labor market information data production requirement. This would require the Commissioner of Deed to work with the Office of Higher Education to publish some labor market analysis data, and what they're trying to do is determine which jobs are most high demand and try to coordinate that with the Minnesota, the colleges, to make sure that we're offering the courses that are in high demand right now. Page 151, section 2. This is from the governor's bill, where their deed is making some changes to the MIF program, and so these are just some language changes that will allow them to make certain loans that they weren't allowed to under the program before. So that's also in section 3, making a few changes to the MIF statutes. In page 152, section 4. This language was also contained in the governor's bill, Senate File 1057. This is the new section of statute that would create the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, and that contains information on who can qualify and what kind of rewards and awards they could get under the Job Creation Fund. And that's on pages 152 and 53. Goes through the application process, 154. How many jobs they need to create and retain to qualify and to receive the awards. Page 155 also continues with Job Creation Fund, and then on the top of 157 concludes with some rulemaking exemption for the department for this new fund. Excuse me. Section 5 comes from a Senator Hoffman bill's Senate File 640. This creates a Trade Policy Advisory Council. Talks about the membership in Subdivision 2 on page 157.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Sorry for interrupting. Senator Tomasoni, going back to the labor market information data section that was part of Senate File 899, I don't see the language with regard to the workforce centers going back into the high schools. That was part of Senate File 899.
Oh, Mr. Chair, members, there are some other sections from your bill that will
thank
appear
you.
Later.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Tomasoni, this Minnesota Job Creation Fund, does this have any direct implications taking away from the workforce development strategy at all?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, if you're talking about the Workforce Development Fund, this is the general fund money.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, I think I was discussing Senator Hoffman's Trade Policy Advisory Council. That was Section 5, and it sets out the membership and... And it does provide a sunset. The no compensation subdivision 8 on page 158 discusses the duties of the Trade Policy Advisory Council and some reporting requirements. On page 159, we have section 6. This was also contained in the governor's bill, Senate File 1057, the Minnesota Trade Offices in Foreign Markets. I believe the department, the trade office would open 3 new offices in 3 key foreign markets and kind of sets out the duties and staffing levels for the trade offices. Section 7 on the bottom of page 159 discusses Minnesota STEP grants, and this is a trade office initiative. It's a state trade and export promotion grants program. It would, for grants up to $7,500 in reimbursement for approved export development activities. Section 8 on page 160 is similar. It's another governor's initiative for the trade office. It's the Invest Minnesota Marketing Initiative. Section 9, Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Bonoff, this is also is part of the Senate File 899 for the Workforce Center, the bill that you carried, Senator Bonoff. Section 10 on the bottom of 160, this is another Senator Bonoff bill, Senate File 352. This is for the Film Production Jobs Program. It makes a few changes to that program. Most importantly, it changes the oversight and control from the Commissioner of Administration, and it transfers it to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development. And then it makes some other changes just regarding what production costs can be reimbursed under the program. On page 162, section 11, this is another provision from Senator Bonoff, Senate File 899, on the labor market survey from DEED. Section 12 on the bottom of page 162 is a Senator Tomasoni bill, Senate File 644. And there are a few provisions that we'll be following, and these are regarding persons with mental illness, the Community Support Services Program. So on continuing to page 163, section 13, actually. Now, this begins Senator Tomasoni's bill. This was some provisions that were added in the division. This is from Senate File 506. And this provision, and then there are a few others that will follow as well. I'm sorry, some of these are interspersed, are concerning lockouts and availability of additional unemployment benefits. So you will see on the top of 164, there's some language there regarding lockouts, persons that are in a lockout situation. Section 14 is also from Senate File 506, and it discusses on the bottom of page 164 who is eligible to receive additional unemployment benefits because of a lockout. And that language continues on to page 165 at the top. It says they would only be eligible if they had exhausted regular unemployment benefits, if they weren't eligible for extended unemployment benefits or other federal benefits, and that the lockout is an act of progress. And also in sections 15 and 16, and I believe that ends the lockout provisions, these provisions would only apply to lockouts that are in progress on or after the date of enactment, and that change was made in the division. Section 15 and 16, this just continues to make the changes that would allow for individuals who are in a lockout situation to collect additional unemployment, and it would limit it in section 16. It limits it to 2 years till after they have exhausted their regular unemployment benefits. Section 17, this was a bill I mentioned earlier. It's Senator Tomasoni's Senate File 644, and this just makes some more changes regarding employment support services for persons with mental illness, some clarifications in the program. Section 18, that is the same bill. On page, and then that language continues to page 167. On 168 in Section 19, this comes from the governor's bill, Senate File 1057. This is a provision that it would allow if there was a certain balance in the trust fund by a certain date that there would be no additional assessment assigned to employers for the unemployment based tax rate. And then it also continues into for a balance that is on September 30th of 2014. This would just not allow an additional assessment to be assigned. Section 20 is Senator Bonoff's bill. This specifies the specific workforce councils for the pilot program for combining career and higher education and lays out the workforce service areas on lines 168.13 to 0.15.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ingridson.
Well, thank you. Could you... maybe Senator Tomasoni or staff could answer a question here on Section 19, Unemployment Insurance Employer Tax Reduction. What is the trust fund account now? Does anybody know where those numbers are? What's in that account?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe Mr. Jensen has that information.
Okay. Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, members, the trust fund balance, I think, is about... $400 million at the end of this week. Mr. Chairman, that does not reflect the additional collections for the first quarter of this calendar year. They'll be coming in a little bit later in April. So it's expected that by the end of September, this balance would be up around $800 or $900 million.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Tomasoni and whoever worked on this, I just want to congratulate you for a number of provisions to enhance the relationship between MNSQ and the Workforce Development Organization.
Senator Bonoff deserves it.
I mean,
credit.
It really is. Those two entities have a lot to do with getting the trained people into the right positions, using our higher education system, and dealing with all the difficulties that unemployed people run into. And so just congratulations for working hard on that.
Say thank you, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, thank you very much for that. And I just also want members particularly to pay attention to that. Section 20 is very exciting because it actually tells the workforce centers to work with our high schools. And I had hoped that we would have gone statewide with it, not just put the pilots in. And I'm hoping that with the resources we provided, that I see the folks from Deed sitting here, and I'm hoping that they would look at how to do that statewide. But thank you.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Tomasoni, and I apologize for playing catch-up, but we move faster.
We are going
three.
Fast.
So, if we could go back to page 165, maximum unemployment benefits. I could be out of date, but I think historically unemployment benefits were available for about 26 weeks. And under this provision, it would appear that there are certain people that are going to be eligible for unemployment benefits for up to 2 years. So in some cases, am I correct that folks will have available for them unemployment benefits for 2.5 years?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Newman, this is only in the case of a lockout, and you are correct. This would, after they've exhausted any unemployment benefits that are available to them, both state and federal, then they would be eligible for up to 2 years.
For up to 2.5 years then in total?
It could be 2.5. It could be a little bit longer because sometimes there's other extensions. So if the 26 weeks has an extension on it, it's because we've done this where they've got another 13 weeks, and depending upon the economy. So, yeah, if you just want to use the 26 weeks, then it's 2.5, yeah.
So, Mr. Chairman, there's a possibility here that it would be more than 2.5 years for certain people.
Depending upon what the laws are in effect at the time of the lockout, yes.
Thank you, Senator Thompson.
Senator Ingridson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we had very extensive discussion in the committee division with regards to this. So the people we're talking about here are, and there was discussion about you had to be moving forward, I think you had mentioned when we went through this statute. the lockout process has to be moving forward. No? There was nothing like that? So I'm just wondering if I missed that or I apologize if that's not the case.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingres, I think that was part of the discussion. Okay. I don't think that made that this, into the language.
But lockouts pertain to unions and unions only.
And,
correct?
Yeah, labor, unions, disputes. Yeah, labor disputes between,
that's
between
right. All right.
Unions and employers.
Thank you. Yes.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe we can start on the bottom of page 168 with Article 8. This is the miscellaneous economic development provisions. Section 1 was added in division, and this is part of statute that deals with recyclability and energy efficiency and would require that whenever practicable, a public entity shall use paper that is made on a paper machine located in Minnesota. Section 2 comes from Senate File 735. This is a Senator Dietzick's bill. It's a new subdivision in the Bureau of Mediation Services statute that allows for some grants to private nonprofit entities that assist in resolution of disputes. Section 3 on page 170, this was added in the division as well, and this would exempt the commissioner of the IRRB from several chapters and allow on line 170.16 and 1 through 19, this would allow the commissioner to use the options available to municipalities when utilizing contract options, and then also not subject the agency to the requirement that the technology employees be employees of the Office of Employment, Office of Enterprise Technology, or MINET, as it's called now, I guess, and then also exempt the agency from some contracts management requirements.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, did MINET have a position on that? Was that something you worked out with MINET?
I was going to say, Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Bonoff, that statute actually contains a provision in it that exempts a number of other agencies and offices, and I for some reason, we just didn't put it in there, but there are other exemptions. This would not be the only 8th office or group.
Mr. Chair, and I'm still asking the question. Does MINET have a position on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, I don't know.
Is there somebody here from MINET?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, I know the IRRB agency has a position on it.
Okay.
There is a guy distracted.
I get
Senator Bonoff?
That's all right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, continuing on page 170 at the bottom, section 4 was another provision added in division, and this is regarding a distribution to school districts. This continues on page 171 and 172 over the top of 173. On page 173, section 5 was added in division, and this is would make a distribution to the city of Eveleth. Section 6 is there will be a number of provisions that are from Senator Dibble's Senate File 411, and this is relating to some new notice requirements for contracts for deed. So so there are a number of provisions, and I'll just mention those as I go through that relate to this bill, to Senate File 411. Page 173 at the bottom, Section 7 is also part of that Senate File 411, Senator Dibble, and it provides some definitions. Specifically, what's key is the multiple seller, that it's for 4 or more contracts for deed involving residential property during a 12-month period. Section 8 is also from Senate File 411, and this provides the notice requirements on page 174, and then it over to 175 contains the specific notice requirements and the type of paper it needs to be on, and key things to remember for individuals that are entering into contracts for deed. That's on page 176. There's a right to cancel purchase agreement in subdivision 4. Continuing on to page 177, just some more information on what's required in the notice. Section 9 on page 177 is also from Senate File 411, and this is regarding that this is in addition to any remedies that would be available under law for contracts for deed. Section 10 on the bottom of page 177 is for the 2013 distribution. This was added in a division. And the author's amendment contains a few more provisions that were added to this section. Section 11 on page 178 is IRRB bonds are authorized. This was added in division. On page 179, section 12, this is not the exact way that was written in Senate File 837, that Senator Cohen's bill, but this is some session law that is in section 12, and this would allow for, in years 2014 and 2015, the City of St. Paul, this would be partial forgiveness for the River Center loan. It would be reduced by $1 million for this biennium. In the next biennium and through 2021, no repayments would be required from the City of St. Paul, but the money that would be repaid from the lessee to the City of St. Paul would need to be put back into the River Center for finance, design, construction, et cetera, for the facility, and that is pursuant to the project list that was agreed to between the city and the lessee. In Section 13, we have repealers. These were all contained in the governor's proposal in Senate File 1057. Most of them deal with repealing the Science and Technology Authority, and then the one provision does repeal a filing requirement penalty for contracts for deed. That relates to Senate File 411, which is Senator Dibble's bill. And that is the end.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Doyle-Fontaine. Are there questions or amendments on the part of committee members? Senator Limmer.
Going back to page 169, there's a reference to purchasing paper made on a paper machine located in Minnesota. That's on line 13. How many paper factories are in Minnesota that make paper for this purpose?
Senator Thomasoni.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Sachsacker might have a better handle on that than I do, but we do have some paper mills in Minnesota. So, and it was actually brought to my attention on Forestry Day when the logging people were down that we have a tendency to buy paper from other states, not made in this state.
Mr. Chair, as Senator Thompson, Senator Lemmer, you know, there's three basic. Paper machines, or a number of paper machines, three different locations for paper machines in Minnesota right now: International Falls, Grand Rapids, and Cloquet. Oh, and Duluth.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, it's not mandatory. It's when practicable.
It's when?
It's not mandatory. It's when practicable.
The only question I had is if it was due to a very limited number of paper companies and we're not allowing anyone else to bid for paper, they could put any price on it, and we might be forced by law to take whatever price that they put on their paper. There's no limitation, at least to recognize an ongoing standard paper price, or I don't know how they do it, but I wouldn't want to get us caught in a position where we have to get it from one particular paper company for the purpose of the paper that we're talking about, not newspaper, I don't think, and then pay whatever price that they deem, because now by law we have to buy from only one supplier.
I understand.
And Mr. Chair, Senator
Thomasoni,
Senator Limmer, now this is coming back to me, the type of paper that we are looking at right here is from Boise Cascade International Falls.
So, Mr. Chair, does that mean, Senator Sachshaug, that we're really limiting the supplier of this particular paper we're talking about to only one manufacturer in the state?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, as Senator Thomasoni said, it's does it say we're practical? And I think that that should be on a competitive basis. I'm sure it will be.
No, that's my point, Mr. Chair. If there's only one supplier, how do you achieve a competitive model with one supplier of paper?
Mr. Chair, it's always a good question, Senator Limmer. I do know the International Falls, the Boise Cascade, is one of the more competitive paper mills in the world.
Senator Champion.
Mr. Chair, I would like to offer the A1 amendment.
If we could have that distributed. Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment before you actually adds some language to line 6.9, the lines before that talks about revenue that would be extracted from the Environmental Fund for monitoring air hazards, and especially in the metropolitan area. And I'm just asking that the commissioner, when selecting areas to monitor, shall give priority to areas where low-income indigenous American Indians and communities of color are disproportionately impacted by pollution from highway traffic, air traffic, and industrial sources. So that is the nature of the amendment, and I would ask for support.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any problem with this. I don't know if anybody else does, but I don't have any problem.
Further discussion on the A1. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering, when we give the function to the environmental folks to do this, wouldn't they go to where the most monitoring should go on? I'm wondering if this becomes more specific, this particular amendment, or does it give them does it take away the leeway for the folks to do it?
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator, right now there is a process that they use, and this does not hamper that process in any shape, form, or fashion, but this language would give them some directive as to, you know, making sure that these particular areas receive greater priority, and I think Senator Dibble would also like to speak to this.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen. So this is adding language to a bill that I had proposed, and this is actually after many years of encouraging the PCA to undertake this activity and them simply not doing it, finally coming to the conclusion that we needed to appropriate some specific dollars for the purpose of purchasing mobile monitoring equipment to monitor air, and it's really an initiative that's come out of the urban areas. Particular neighborhoods are fairly heavily impacted by major public transportation infrastructure. It's probably not coincidental that those areas have a lot of communities of color, low-income communities, Native communities as well. So it's just putting a little bit more emphasis on what we're trying to accomplish. It maintains flexibility because it's a shall give priority to language. It's not shall place these air monitoring equipment in a specific location. But we want to be sure that what we're trying to accomplish, at least at the outset, is achieved. So I appreciate the language that Senator Champion is offering.
Further questions on the A1 amendment? Senator Sieben.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for Senator Champion, or Senator Dibble, this is new money that you're directing. And the reason I raise the concern is because communities that I represent have mobile monitoring equipment as a result of the one hazardous waste facility that's located in Cottage Grove. And I'm happy to support this as long as it doesn't take, and I don't think actually that the mobile monitoring equipment that's surrounding the hazardous waste facility in Cottage Grove is paid for by the PCA, but I'm just trying to confirm that. So I guess my question is, this is new money. It's not taking it from any existing PCA fund that's monitoring industrial air pollution.
Senator Champion.
Mr. Knopf, maybe you can address that.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Mr. Chair, bring us to the rider on page 6 that this is amending. This was an initiative of former Senator Higgins a number of years ago, and it really was targeted to these areas in the state. This was kind of additional money to the agency, and we've been carrying this in the base now. They do other monitoring from the Environmental Fund and other funds. They're required under federal law. A lot of the additional money for the air monitoring that Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier is for a lot of the monitoring that goes on in the state. This was some additional monitoring in the metropolitan area to get at areas that have hazardous pollutants. And I think what this amendment does is it focuses it. Would explain those areas. I think those would be a lot of the same areas that they would already be monitoring now anyways. The amendment provides that focus to those areas. Again, this was an initiative a number of years ago to put some additional money into monitoring in the metropolitan area because of certain areas where we have hazardous air pollutants. And I think a lot of the areas that are in the amendment are the types of areas that Senator Higgins foresaw when she asked to have this put in.
So, Mr. Knopf.
Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Mr. Knopf, what I'm reading into this would not take away from any of the existing monitoring that's taking place of industrial sources because it's additional money.
Well,
it wouldn't redirect that money only to areas where it's specifically impacting these particular communities.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen, there is additional money, and it's $300,000 in the first year for the purchase of the monitoring equipment. But this also does affect the base rider of $125,000 per year for ambient air monitoring in the Twin Cities area for hazardous pollutants. So it does affect both the base and the additional monitoring or the purchase of the mobile monitoring equipment. But it would, again, I think that a lot of the additional monitoring that was done under this additional money that was put in, I'm trying to remember, probably about eight to ten years ago, is in those same areas.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess just listening to the conversation, I'm sitting here and wondering why the agency wouldn't be giving a priority to an area like this. I guess without this amendment, does it not give them the opportunity to do that? I'm just wondering.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's correct to say that the agency could do it if they were motivated to do it. But as so eloquently articulated by Senator Dibble, this is something that has been on the radar. There's been a number of requests for there to be some attention to these areas where there is a lot of environmental challenges, and as a result of some of those pollutants, various communities, especially communities of color, are experiencing high levels of health hazards, and I think the data reflects that. This particular amendment isn't meant to take away anything that is existing at this particular time, but it is also to say let's focus it as much as we can, but still provide the necessary leeway for the agency to use their discretion to determine where this equipment should go and really make sure that it benefits all of us. And so with that being said, I think that it's a great amendment.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Champion, it's not that I oppose your amendment, but I just want to reiterate some of the concerns Senator Steven raised, because it seems to me that where we want to monitor is where we have the existence of industry-related pollution. And, you know, some of that industry is moving to the
exurban areas. We have pockets of this all over, and so I would trust that our agencies are, you know, just naturally would go to these areas where the pollution is the greatest. So I'm just, I wouldn't want, if, for example, there was limited resources but more air pollution in a different part, that it's just, it raises those questions.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I agree with Senator Champion. The goal is not to impact anything that's occurring in Senator Sieben's district. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I wish, and Senator Bonhoff, I wish they were monitoring in these areas that we're talking about. They're simply not, and they haven't been for years, despite many, many efforts and requests for them to do so. So we need this language. That's just a fact. You know, I'll point out that, you know, we're talking about a rider on, you know, almost $30 million that's designated in the Environmental Fund for purposes of air programs. You know, so, you know, if we need some additional language that says this shall not detract from the activities going on already, that would be fine.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
I don't think we need to do that, Senator Dibble. I think your point is well taken.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I look at this before Senator Limmer goes up, maybe this will help. Mr. Knopf has Governor Knopf. No, Mr. Knopf has a potential addition to the amendment. I don't know if this will help or not.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if this helps or not either. But on line 1.3, before the first comment after monitor, insert with the new mobile monitoring equipment. So the commissioner, when selecting areas to monitor with the new mobile monitoring equipment, shall give priority to areas. So it's tied into the new money given for the equipment.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I've been listening to the discussion, it gives me the way I read the amendment, it seems like we're making a choice to prioritize this monitoring equipment simply based on race and not necessarily the highest health risk that may be suspected in the state. Now, if that's the case, I don't know why we couldn't put in somewhere into this amendment recognizing where the highest health risk may be suspected rather than simply making an amendment that seems to ignore the health risk and only the neighborhood. And I think the whole purpose of any monitoring equipment would be placed in an area where that's where that risk would be. You know, I happen to live in a community where three freeways converge, 120,000 cars a day drive by, and there's quite a bit of traffic pollution that flows across and down that freeway due to the high traffic concentration. But if this amendment would pass, then that area in my neighborhood would be ignored due to the fact that there's now a priority that's defined by a different racial composition. I don't know if we really want to do that and make that policy in the state.
Is there further discussion, Mr. Chairman, Senator Champion?
Mr. Chairman, to Senator Limmer's point, I might point out that on page 5.28, there is a monitoring program that does not deal with the mobile monitoring equipment. So I think there's a monitoring program already in place for that monitors releasing air, ambient concentrations, air and deposition from air and toxic substances. So I think that's going on already, and I think the section that we're dealing with here is regarding mobile monitoring equipment. So with Mr. Knopf's suggested amendment, I think we maybe are getting to the things that people are talking about here.
Okay. Senator Champion or Senator Dibble?
Well, Mr. Chair, it says shall give priority, so it wouldn't exclude any place. We know a few things already. We know that we have some of the highest concentrations of poverty of any metropolitan area in the country, if not the highest concentrations, some of the highest rates of housing concentration by color. We also know we have some of the worst health disparities in health outcomes. I would challenge anyone to find a neighborhood like Phillips that's completely surrounded by heavy-duty transportation and industrial impacts, both surrounding it and over it and distributed throughout, or the near north side, very, very similar. And our efforts to get some mobile air monitoring into those areas hasn't succeeded. And so, you know, at least at the outset, after we buy some of this equipment, we'd like to figure out what exactly is going on. There's many, many multi-layered effects impacting folks, and we know the rates of asthma that kids have, neighborhoods close to the Capitol here, Phillips near north. We have a sense of what's going on, and we need to be monitoring and understanding in more detail and more depth so that we can respond effectively. Big, big part of our healthcare dollars going out the window because, you know, we have these health outcome and health disparities.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to just make one last comment. I think that Senator Tomasoni's reference in the bill, I think, addresses Senator Limmer's concern. But I want to speak directly to the fact that this particular amendment is not just focused around color and race. If you look at this particular amendment, it extracts race, it extracts low income, but it creates a nexus between not just color, but also those who are impacted by pollution from highway traffic, air traffic, and industrial sources. So it's not just saying that if it's a community of color, just put an air monitoring system there. It's saying, no, if there is a nexus between these things that we are concerned about and people of color and people who are low income, it says that we should give some priority to that. And I naturally will assume, because we do think highly of our state agencies, that if there are other concerns, that they will articulate that and they would be very diligent about addressing the concerns around the table. We just know that this is a challenge that this agency has had, and we just want to help along the way so that all of our lives improve. And so I ask that the committee support the A1 amendment.
All right, we've had a good discussion, Sarah Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I'd like Mr. Kanoff to read his proposed amendment again and offer that language if Senator Champion's okay with that.
Mr. Chair and members, be on line 1.3 of the amendment, after monitor, before the comma, insert with the new mobile monitoring equipment. And so this would be tied to the new equipment that's being authorized in the first year for expenditure.
Senator Champion?
I will accept it as a friendly amendment to my amendment.
So Senator Champion incorporates that language into his amendment. We have the A1 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Oh. Motion carries. Senator, we're under call, but Senator Peterson, you had your hand up. So just a last question from Senator Peterson.
Yeah, I was wondering if Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, if you could direct us to the spot in the bill where you're repealing the reforms from the state nursery that were implemented into law last year.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, you'll find that on page 77, line 5. If you look at 77.5, there's a paragraph B, repealing laws of 2011 for special session chapter 2, article 4, section 30.
Yep. Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, I'd like to have the DNR respond to that because this bill was done with a significant amount of negotiation with the department last session. As you may recall, the initial bill was to close both of these nurseries, and the DNR advocated for this plan that we have now, which would require one of the nurseries to come up with the business plan, mainly because these nurseries are in direct competition with local family businesses and that pay property taxes. And Senator Tomasoni, by repealing this bill, this law, you're asking these local businesses to go into competition with the state of Minnesota at a very, very significant disadvantage. And so I guess before we'd ask the department to come up, actually, did you have a hearing on this bill, this repeal at all? Or?
Senator Tomasoni?
Mr. Chairman, this bill was heard in, where was it heard?
Environment.
Environment, I think it was Senator Saxhock's, part of Senator Saxhock's bill, if I'm not mistaken.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Saxog, is this repeal? Is that your bill?
Senator Saxog?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, it's not my bill what my bill sought to do was to make some very significant changes in the law that's being repealed, and it didn't seem to be getting to any satisfactory point, and so it was my thought that we should just repeal the law.
Okay, Mr. Chair,
Senator Peterson,
could we ask somebody from the DNR and come up and comment on why they're supporting the repeal of that legislation?
There's someone from the agency. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Senator Peterson, could you repeat your question for me, please?
Well, the first question is, I guess, are you supporting the repeal that Senator Tomasoni has in this, which would not require those nurseries to put together a business plan and operate in the black, so to speak?
Mr. Chairman, members, we have been working with Senator Saxog and others on the provisions in his bill that would allow the sale of these seedlings to soil and water conservation districts. This language in the bill is another way to do this. There's still a lot of statutory requirements, specifically in chapters 89.35 to 89.43, that still prohibit the production, limits the production to 10 million seedlings annually. It requires the nurseries to be self-sufficient. We don't see this, the repealer, changing anything within our current production. We will still not go back and replant the General Andrews Nursery at this time, which was part of the language that was passed during Special Session 2011. So this is just another way of moving forward in what Senator Saxog's bill allowed, sale to soil and water conservation districts.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer, your position is that the repeal of this law does not take away the requirement for those nurseries to operate in the black and not lose money?
Mr. Chairman, all of the statutory language that's there still remains, so we still have to be self-sufficient. Our intention is to continue working with the Landscape Nursery Association and the private producers to make sure that we both have our niches and move forward. So this just allows us to help do that.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'd also like to hear from Mr. Tim Power from the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, if possible, as well, in regard to this issue.
Mr. Power, if you could just identify yourself, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Our association supported the accession law change.
Say your name.
My name is Tim Power. I'm the Interim Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. Thank you, Senator. We supported the accession law in 2011 because we thought that it was entirely appropriate and reduced the competition between a government entity and members of my association. The repealer completely undoes this. We feel that there is middle ground that would meet the needs of the soil and water conservation districts and still retain the intent and the direction from the language from 2011. That would be Senator Saxog's original Senate File 57, which allowed the continued sale of seedlings from the state forest nurseries to the soil and water conservation districts. In the Judiciary Committee, Senator Benson offered a friendly amendment which would restrict the DNR to selling only coniferous stock to the soil and water conservation districts. That is the position that we would prefer to see taken by the Senate. Certainly, looking at the continuum of the Senate taking no action or the Senate providing a repealer, the original Senate File 57 is a better solution than complete repeal. But we would prefer to see only the sale of coniferous stock allowed, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Power. Senator Peterson?
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, I guess I'm still not understanding the motivation behind this. I'm not sure if you visited a nursery up in that area or not, but I think we all would agree these are not lucrative businesses, and they have property taxes to pay, quite frankly, and I'm not sure how you're putting these businesses in a position to continue to meet those obligations to their townships, their counties, and their cities that they are involved in when they're in direct competition with the state of Minnesota in growing trees.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, it's my understanding we need a lot of trees, and that the operations of the DNR don't lose money, that they break even, and that there's ample room for the private nurseries as well. So it seems to me this works.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my problem with what happened with the 2011 laws pretty much revolves around forests and forest production and forest management. What we're talking about here, of course, with what's have for all practical purposes, the General Andrews Nursery has been shut down. It'll be maybe used for some seed production, but that I guess would have been one of the objects of what happened in 2011. But I'm concerned, as I always have been, that we have bare root seedlings available and seed production available in the state of Minnesota, so that we aren't having anything coming in from outside, because I just believe that with invasive species the way they are, and with the importance of our forest industry and the availability of these bare root seedlings and seeds are very important. We have one state nursery that's in full production, Bedura, over in Hubbard County. It's very important, and I think with as Mr. Meyer said, that 89.35 to 89.43 has significant restrictions. In fact, it restricts us to sales to bare root seedlings and wood cuttings.
Well, Mr. Chair,
thank you.
I'm sorry.
Thank
go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank General you, Mr. Chair. You know, the bill, as introduced in the last biennium, that really called for complete closure of both of these tree nurseries, really highlights what the goals of this function is. And I think it's important that we talk about the value of the tree nursery program to the state of Minnesota. It was just a couple of years ago that we planted our billionth tree out of the tree nurseries. There is a public good to making sure that we have affordable bare root tree stock that is certified local, and that's what these entities do. And they run as an enterprise function. There's no cost to the state of Minnesota to do this, and we provide a valuable, valuable resource to our farmers and those of us that are concerned with conservation. It is a spring tradition across all of my region to get those soil and water conservation district lists with the trees. I've personally planted tens of thousands of these trees. And it's something that is of great value to us and that enhances the environment. And the idea that we'd have to shut down this important state resource that we operate at no net cost, that benefits other businesses as well. Just north of my, on the northern side of my district, Sappy, just invested $172 million of private money in updating their pulp and paper lines to go into chemical cellulose extraction, investing in the future of the forest industry. And at the same time, we're down here closing down our state tree nurseries that go to the viability of the future of the forest industry. I mean, I think that repealing the session law from last year, which it was incredibly restrictive and going back to the existing statutes, some of which are in competition with each other. The session law, which is just sitting in session law, not in our statute books, is actually in conflict with some of what's in statute. And there are several restrictions in the existing statute. It limits to 10 million seedlings annually, and they're not anywhere near that, and they can't get to that with Bedura alone. It requires still the enterprise function, self-sufficiency. You know, it will then open up for sales to SWCDs, restricts sales. You know, it has to be the bare root seed stock. It's certified local so that we know they'll grow. There's a phenomenal benefit to operating the nurseries. These restrictions have grown over time, and I think it's important that we recognize the value of supporting the future of our forest industry.
Senator Fischbach. Yeah, Sir Fischbach, I've been getting messages from the floor as to whether or not we should stop or continue to go, and I've been informed that we can continue to go if we can try to wrap this up. I know Senator Ingebrigtsen has an amendment.
I have an oral amendment, Mr. Chair.
Is there?
Okay. Us who are having to stay here, but there are some of us who want to attend
Okay, and that's fair, Senator Fischbach. I'm not sure how much. I don't want to interrupt debate on this issue, Senator Peterson. If you wish to continue, you know we can come back later on. I know Senator Ingebrigtsen
we certainly have some comments with regards to this as well.
Pardon?
I would encourage the chair to do that. Yeah, this is not a small issue.
Okay. All right. Well, why don't we recess then to the call of the chair? I'm not sure if that would be mid-afternoon or at the end of the afternoon, but we'll recess to the call of the chair.
Exactly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So now.